Okay.
I would like to call the meeting of the State Board of Education and Early Development to order. It is September 25th, 2013. Roll call, Ms. News.
Colonel
Hayes. Here.
Ms. Lee.
Here.
Mr. Fields.
Here.
Ms. Cox.
Here.
Ms. Shaker.
Here.
Mr. Shatter.
Here.
Ms. Hall.
Here.
Mr. Mariner.
Here.
And Captain Mary Fitzhugh.
Thank you. Thank you. Has everybody had a chance to look at the agenda for today? Do we have any changes? All right. We have a motion to approve.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the agenda for today as stated.
Second.
Any discussion? All right. Ms. Newth?
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Colonel Hayes?
Yes.
Mr. Fields?
Yes.
Ms. Cox?
Yes.
Ms. Shaker?
Yes.
Mr. Shiner?
Yes.
Ms. Hall?
Yes.
Mariner?
Yes.
And motion to approve.
Thank you. And this is the opportunity for members of the board to disclose any potential conflicts of interest on the agenda. Anyone? And yesterday I forgot to remind the group that when the early literacy screening was on the agenda in June, I had presented a ruling by my ethics supervisor, Judy Bachman, and it was determined that I was able to, and the potential issue, at least in my mind, the reason I asked for the determination was because the Galena City School District, my employer at this time, has made me the district test coordinator for the district, and so this had to do with assessments, and she ruled that it was fine that I participate, and the board had no issue with that ruling at the time. I just wanted to get that out on the table again, because we have early literacy screening on the agenda. Okay, let's move forward. Agenda item 6A. Proposed amendments to the regulation regarding district-operated statewide residential programs.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am.
I move the State Board of Education and Early Development open a period of public comment on amendments to 4AAC 33.090 district-operated statewide residential educational program.
Second.
Do we have any discussion? Any questions for the department? I know Heidi was just so excited to answer any questions. Okay. Thank you. Roll call, Ms.
Colonel Hayes.
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Ms. Hall?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh.
Okay. Yes.
Ms. Shaker?
Yes.
Ms. Cox?
Yes. Did we vote yes, Sue?
Yes.
Mr. Mariner?
Yes. Thank you. Moving to agenda.
Can I just make a little statement
sure.
about that? Because I think it's important, so maybe just for the record. You know, I'm really pleased that the department is, you know, looking into this and that we're making the right changes. I think it will benefit kids in the state, and I'm proud to be part of the board that is promoting this, because I think it's the sort of thing that Alaskan kids need. So I just want to thank the department for the work that they did on it.
Thank you, Board Member Hull. Excellent words. Agenda item 6B. Board is being asked to open a period of public comment on proposed amendments to regulations that implement a screening assessment for early literacy skills.
I move the State Board of Education and Early Development rescind its action of June 7th in adopting the proposed amendments to 4AAC 06.713. Early literacy screening.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I just, for the record, we have some folks listening in. Appreciate the department hearing precisely and carefully what the board intended and then discovering a defect here that those things happen. And I hope that we can move apace so that we're not holding up any funding that may be ready to flow to people, get good work done.
And could I just add to that, you know, and the changes will allow more flexibility for districts, and I think that's important to, for folks to be aware of, that it will give them, that they can use existing assessments rather than having to start new ones. That's really cool.
Anyone else? All right. Roll call, Ms. Newsom.
Okay.
Yes.
Williams?
Yes.
Ms. Cox?
Yes.
Mr. Shire?
Yes.
Ms. Schaefer?
Yes.
Mr. Fields?
Yes.
Ms. Cox?
Yes.
Mr. Mariner?
Yes.
Approved.
Well, I wonder if we have any more conversation on this item.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I move the State Board of Education and Early Development open a period of supplemental public comment on the proposed alternate version of 4AAC 06.713 early literacy screening.
Do we have a second?
Second.
That was a tie, but I heard Esther louder.
Go, Esther.
Because she's closer to me. So, discussion? Okay.
Well,
yeah. Yes. Go ahead.
I'll leap into the breach. I would hope that districts will pay attention to these regulations and give us any feedback. If there's something that the department has missed, you know, we would want to hear about that. So hopefully this will get out to districts and school board folks, and we'll hear from them if there are any problems.
Generally, Ms. Hall, we hear from the districts when there are any problems at opening the public comment.
Thank you.
I would expect that's the case.
All right. Any other discussion? All right. Roll call, Ms. New.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Colonel Hayes?
Yes.
Ms. Hall?
Yes.
Ms. Fox?
Yes.
Mr. Fields?
Yes.
Mr. Shire?
Yes.
Ms. Schaefer?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, thank you. Agenda item 7. I'm going to pass the baton to the commissioner. Agenda item 7.
For the TLS report?
Yeah. Just so you can introduce.
Perfect, so I can introduce.
There you go.
So we have the TLS report, and the information here will be provided by our director of TLS, Dr. McCauley.
So I'm just going to briefly highlight three of the things on the report, and those would be the first three bullets. They constitute, I think, the bulk of the work that the TLS division has been engaged in since your last meeting. The first is that we spent August and September doing a lot of presentations to districts, both through BCC and a lot of face-to-face as well, in response to their requests that TLS staff provide professional development during their startup back-to-school in-services. And I think it's obvious that this is connected with a lot of the new work in the district that is coming out of, in part, coming out of the waiver and that having been approved and more having approved related regulations in June. So we spent a lot of time presenting to districts about the new standards, about the new Alaska School Performance Index, about the educator evaluation regulations, and about the timeline for all of those. So it feels that things are moving now from district-level awareness to teacher-level awareness. And while I still think we have a lot of work to do there, there's a lot of evidence that the information is now getting to classroom teachers. And with regard to the standards in particular, clearly that's important because that is where the instruction of kids happens. It's in the classroom. We also have been really busy planning some key professional development events that are available to folks all over Alaska. The most recent was last week's Teaching and Learning Support Institute. We had, I believe at last count, 32 districts represented there, about 150 folks, mostly district office level staff, and spent 2 days, again, walking them through the new work, the timelines, and helping them think about how to move forward in their districts with implementation. We also did the Every Other Year Providers Conference, where we bring together all of our Alaska statewide mentors, our Alaska administrative coaches, and the state system of support coaches for 2 days of professional development with them together. And it's interesting. We've really begun to think about them as part of our capacity at the department. It can be a little overwhelming at times to think about how we can help districts and schools in light of our staff and capacity. But when we consider that capacity in terms of those providers, the lift feels a bit lighter, and they are out in the field across Alaska working directly with teachers and principals and district administrators as well. So the second thing I wanted to talk with you about is what is happening with the website. I don't know if you've noticed we did a pretty significant redesign of that, and we're still working on cleaning up some dated material that really isn't relevant anymore. But when you go to the department's website now, you see a graphic that is a Big Dipper graphic, and it talks about our preparing college, career, and culturally ready graduates, which I believe we've mentioned before as the way we're framing the work. But it is kind of the one-stop shop now for where they can access all of these new resources. We spent a lot of time this summer developing fact sheets and frequently asked questions documents, and all of those are now available there. We're working hard now to populate the parent and community star on that graphic, and Eric Fry, who conveniently just walked out of the room, Eric has really spent a lot of time working on developing documents for parents and the general public. And so you'll see more of those in the near future. That is our big focus right now, is getting, for example, grade-level guide to the new standards for parents. We've gotten a lot of really positive feedback from districts and schools with regard to being able to find the resources and knowing where to go on our website. So the last thing I wanted to mention is where things are with regard to our helping districts and schools move toward implementation of those new educator evaluation regulations. And Member Cox, you asked me about this specifically 2 days ago, I think it was. Have we been here 2 days? And so we had an educator evaluation advisory committee last year. They strongly recommended that the department take up the work of developing both process and actual evaluation documents for optional use by districts, and that we do that in a way that reflects, obviously, alignment with the regulations, but also reflects the variation that exists across districts in Alaska. So what we've done is engaged the help of Education Northwest, the comprehensive center that assists us. They have some really excellent in-house expertise there. And so they are working with us and 7 districts to begin to develop the actual, for optional use, again, documents that could be used as part of an evaluation system and the process requirements as well. I'll just give you an example. The regulations require that districts ensure annual training to ensure inter-rater reliability between observers. The districts know that, but they don't necessarily have a vision for how to do that yet, and they need some help with that. They're required to put together a team of stakeholders to engage in the work of the development at the local level. And I mean, a team of stakeholders probably is going to look very different in large districts like Anchorage and Matsu than in a small district like Tuscaloosa. It won't look different in terms of constituent representation, because the regulations prescribe constituent representation. But it will look different in terms of the number of people, obviously. So my point there is that we spent, when I came on board in the department in January, we spent the spring working with our Educator Evaluation Advisory Committee. They advised that we then take the work to the next level and develop documents, both the actual tools that could be used and guidance documents in terms of process. They've also recommended that we take it to even a deeper level. And this is a very recent conversation that Deputy Commissioner Morse and I spent quite a bit of time on Friday with Ed Northwest in. And that was a terrible sentence. I mean, my prepositional phrases were out of order. But what districts are saying, and of course it's our small district. It's the district where the superintendents are arguably the one-stop shop for everything. They're curriculum director, their engaged in negotiated agreements. They're entering to a board. They're managing the budget. They're supervising principals. That's where we're seeing some anxiety around just the capacity to do the work. So the next level with the help of Ed Northwest would be to, again, optionally engage probably mostly small districts in assisting them with the design of their system from a convening and a facilitating standpoint. So clearly, they have a responsibility to go about that development at the local level, and that is not something the department can or should be doing for them. That isn't our role. What we can do, though, is help them in terms of bringing them together with districts working on this together and facilitating processes. And when I say we, in great part I mean with the help of Ed Northwest, because they have a lot of expertise and they're really plugged into what's happening across the country in ways that can be helpful to us. So that's a big piece of work that we will be engaged in for the rest of this school year, with some pretty ambitious timelines to get some documents developed so that districts then can engage in their local required processes for the development.
Can we ask questions as we go along as she moves from topic?
I was going to jump in myself a few times, but she's been so clear and everything. I do have a couple, though.
Sure.
Yes, is that okay, jump in? Okay.
Yeah, relative to that, I was wondering about Ed Northwest's role, and so I really appreciate the clarification about that. But just for further clarification, so the department will facilitate for all districts, but particularly small districts, I heard, process kind of assistance, but also in terms of models like Danielson and all of that, the assistance for working through which models they choose? Yes?
Yeah, and, you know, there do seem to be the trend right now is that districts are either choosing Danielson or Marzano. That's been clearly established when we query districts about where they are. But there is work to be done there. I mean, as you well know, there is the alignment of the teacher standards and the standards for culturally responsive schools for teachers. So there's already the alignment of the teacher standards and standards for educators, cultural standards for educators, and then further the alignment with either the Marzano or Danielson framework. And what is really, I think, valuable about going about the work in this way is that there are districts that have already started the work, and they have some really impressive work that can benefit other districts. I'll just say a couple of examples because I think it's good that they're out in front with the work. I mean, we know that Kenai has been working hard on Danielson. They have that alignment done in documents. Kodiak is doing a lot of work with Marzano. They have those alignments done. So I think a role that we can really play is twofold. One, again, as a convener, we probably can do that better than anybody else, actually, bringing districts together and then accessing the technical expertise of Ed Northwest. And so it really is kind of threefold. We have districts who need to go through their local development processes. We have Ed Northwest, who provides technical assistance and consultant expertise, so to speak. And we have the department, we have us, who know the regulations better than anyone else. We know what they prescribe and what they don't prescribe, and the ability to help districts network in the work.
Yes, ma'am.
Does it go back? Someplace rattling around in my head. And maybe you said it and I missed it. I thought that the State Department was going to develop an instrument that could be used or modified or adapted in districts, which would give them a kick start and not have to start from ground zero. And I understand that some of them are far along. I have no idea what Anchorage is doing, but I know Kenai is. And they're not even worried about adding this teacher event, you know, this student performance bit into their evaluation system. But am I wrong about that, or have we developed a model that people could use?
That's where we're heading.
Great.
Yes, and so what that will look like is districts, and we're working with seven. And again, this is very very new. I think our first meeting is next week, actually, with these seven. So we specifically asked seven districts to work with us because they are already engaged in the work. They have some momentum with it, and they have some capacity in terms of personnel to bring to the table for the work. So we will be working with those seven districts to do exactly what you just said, Member Cox, and that is to develop instruments for optional use by districts. They may tweak them. They may say, okay, this looks like a relatively good walkthrough instrument or a relatively good observation instrument, but we'd like to tweak it in this way. That's perfectly permissible, and that's very different than their starting from scratch and having every district across the state start from scratch. So they can use what we develop if they want. They cannot use it if they don't want, or they could adjust and tweak it if they want.
And one more follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Then we'll get to Board Member Williams. Go ahead.
Okay. We have this year to develop, and it starts 13-14 for implementation?
2014-15.
Okay.
So we still have a couple of years to
develop.
Board Member Williams?
You were talking about constituent groups on the local level, and you mentioned that there were regulations about who were in those groups. So who exactly are in those groups?
The regulations, if I remember correctly, talk to the need to engage, to involve those who are affected, who are impacted by the evaluation, I believe. That for sure. I probably need to recheck that. So I know for certain that those who are going to be impacted by the new educator evaluation regulation, certificated staff, need to be involved as stakeholders in the design of systems. But I probably need to double check and see further what that says. Sandra Meredith is our in-house educator evaluation expert, so she could answer that like that, but I need to go back and read the reg.
Okay. Students are part of that reg.
That's what I'm wondering, and I just can't recall. And that's probably Carly Wade.
James.
And you may have answered this. 2014-15, is there any timeline, or is this be ready before that? Do you have a timeline of when you want the deadline or something?
There is a requirement, again, for the date by which districts have to have posted online their systems for review, but I can't remember. Do you remember, Commissioner?
I thought it was June or July 15.
Okay.
So I thought the first year that they had it posted then, they'd be utilizing 15-16.
15-16, right.
Oh, okay. Are you talking about the adoption, when they have to have it in place?
Yeah.
I just pulled up the regs because I'm trying to find what you're looking for, but it's July 1, 2015, and school district shall adopt, and then it goes through.
Okay. So we are a couple years out.
Yeah. Not later than July 1, 2015, the school district shall adopt, and then it goes on. Basically, the evaluation will be adopted by them in the district.
So 15-16, that school year, then they
will be used.
Implement.
Unless you're looking for Board Member Williams's question.
I am looking.
So can we keep going? I do have a question. Can we go back to bullet point one? This is when you had your teams going out and presenting to districts, and you presented to the ACLIN staff. Who exactly are these ACLIN staff?
We presented to a group of teachers that were engaged in what we call the Alaska-made courses in ACLIN. So they were classroom teachers who had previously developed courses for ACLIN and were going to continue to do so.
And they were brought to a specific location?
They came to Juneau and worked at University of Alaska Southeast. In our content specialist, Karen Moline and Deb Riddle, the English and math content specialists, worked with them to make sure that the courses that they were developing were aligned with our new standards.
Excellent. How many of those teachers are there? And do you know how many districts are represented?
I don't off the top of my head. I want to say that there were around 10 teachers who came in to do that work, but I'd need to get follow up on that.
All right. And then one other thing real quick. So folks who have computers can check me on this, but my memory is in terms of the web page, and I like the graphic of the Dipper and all that, but it seems as if I remember pulling it up, and I have a pretty good size screen on my at work, and all I see is the stuff at the top and the graphic, and then if you weren't to know that there's information down below to scroll down, you might just go, what? So I was just wondering if that's indeed the case, does it make sense at all to somehow pull that graphic, make it a tiny bit smaller so that people at least see the top of the stuff down below so they can, you know, scroll down and know it's there to go down to?
The bar up above that has the different students.
Right. But anyway, it was just a thought I had as, yeah.
Schools, whatever. Yeah. Up above the graphic.
Sure.
Anyway, just to look at that in-house and see if there would be any way to...
Yeah, we can certainly...
If I'm right at how that pulls up. Yes.
I have the same impression.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
Just to validate that. But I have a question related to that first bullet. If
okay.
This would be the right...
Sure.
I was really pleased for that report because, as you might imagine, school board members, maybe James could speak to this as well, are getting lots of questions about how the Alaska standards compare with the Common Core, et cetera. And I was just wondering, I really like the parent stuff that, you know, was available previously and the kind of work that's being done for parents. But is there a one page, and it doesn't have to be exactly that, but just so you know what I'm thinking, a little front and back that could explain how our standards are similar, how they're different, you know, the fact that we have control. There's a degree of misunderstanding about that, and I just keep hearing it over and over, that when people say, well, we didn't adopt the Common Core, then other folks come out and say, well, that's kind of deceptive because the standards are so comparable. And it's not deceptive. And I'm kind of thinking that I listened to the commissioner explain that at the hearing in June, and I just wish that we had a little flyer that said what the commissioner said so that we could – and I think it just keeps rippling. I think we're through the wave of it, and then just this last week I got an email from an assembly member because we had had a previous conversation about it, and I had said, no, go to the standards and see, you know, they're not what you may have heard. And then I get this email from him that said, I finally found it, and it was an article called The Dark Heart of the Common Core that kind of went through one teacher's experience with a module that she was required to teach that had some kind of disturbing stuff in it. And I emailed him back and said, I'm disturbed by that as well. But those are curriculum and suggested lesson plans and all of that would be part of their district decisions. Please go back to the standards. So I did go to the website that we were just talking about and copied the link to the standards and included it in my email back and said, check this link and go through and see if there's anything that you're concerned about. So I think it's just helping people have reassurance about the process. Really, I think it's that process piece and the whole common core.
Now, I remember seeing something that the commissioner had worked up because of that June testifying that you were doing.
Yeah.
It was like a one-pager of some sort. Along those lines.
I thought maybe there was one.
I'd
like to get my hands on it.
Maybe it doesn't have, you know, quite as much information as you're hoping to have.
But I went back, and the last one that I saw was questions from the June hearing that legislators asked, and there wasn't time to answer them. So that information was a little more detailed, and I thought people might get lost in that. What I'd kind of like is just the basic overview of why we're in such a great position, because I think we're in such a great position.
So if I might.
Yes.
And maybe this is what you're looking for, Member Hall, and maybe not, but it's to go to each of those stars on that graphic, at the top there are three tabs. It's fact sheet, frequently asked questions, and for some of them what we call an infographic, which takes all of the information and tries to display it and explain it visually through some sort of graphic organizer. And what you're saying, Member Hall, what I think you're looking for are the English Language Arts and Math fact sheets and frequently asked questions documents. They do say a bit about the fact that we did not adopt the Common Core, why we did not, and the degree of similarity.
Okay.
So I'll be interested to know if that's sufficient for what you're
right,
looking
right.
for. Those are the documents when we are asked by districts and schools often for information they can provide to their public. That's where we point them.
So if you don't mind, Board Member Hull, dig through those, and then if you still have some, then just let the commissioner know, and I'm sure he'll take it from there.
Sounds great.
Is that okay? Speaking for you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Any other questions? Yes, Bunny.
Not really questions, just comments. And the reason why we went with the school year 15-16 for the implementing the evaluations was the teacher quality group said, you know, you can't really evaluate data on for the teachers on data that hasn't been tested yet. So part of the new evaluation system requires that test scores be looked at, and now we're in the midst of developing new assessments. So that's why we went with the 15-16. And then also I did talk to Dr. McCauley earlier, and I complimented her and her staff about the TLS conference last week. I was a participant in that with my school district, and it was much needed. And it was very well attended and very well implemented, and I know our district learned a lot. Instead of me having to try to explain everything, it was nice to and learn.
That's great. Yes, Board Member Deal.
Now, I don't know when the best time to bring this up is, because you covered a bunch of stuff with AKL and the evaluations and everything, and this may not be the proper report, but I know Board Member Shire has been talking to people about bandwidth, and I don't know if that's come up much with districts about they're trying to implement all of this stuff, but they're getting frustrated and with bandwidth, and so I don't know if this is the right report, but
We were going to talk a little bit with Eric McCormick the next report. But anything else for Bunny? Go ahead.
One more comment I wanted to convey is when you're developing or looking at the evaluation draft or plan or whatever you want to call it for districts, to keep in mind that in rural Alaska there's a high turnover, and calibrating that evaluation document, that's something that we are going to struggle with our district, I know. Just making sure that one principal at one site is evaluating the same way that a principal at another site, and keeping that in the back of your minds when you're trying to think of this evaluation document.
Mm-hmm. Right. Thank you.
Okay.
I'd like the newsletter, by the way. It's great. Acklin, and I know UAS is now, can you talk about, or is that something you'd like to talk about, that UAS has now taken a central role in this?
I think we could mention a couple of things briefly, and then maybe you'd like a more full update at an upcoming meeting.
Sure.
But we have our first, since the new partnership, we have our first board meeting, so to speak, on Saturday with the IT board. And now in partnership with UAS, the initial enrollment numbers are looking very promising. Do you recall, she just sent us those data at the end of last week.
Yeah, it's pushing 300, which is double the enrollment we had last year. We've doubled that. We're really stoked about that.
Enrollment, excuse me,
In the courses for the Acklin, we have.
But that district, can you just, I'm sorry. Go ahead, and then I'll ask a question.
Oh.
So we have, it is a combination of courses that are they're all distance delivery, a combination of courses that are, so to speak, off the shelf, and made in Alaska courses is what they call them, that have been designed and developed by Alaska teachers. The intent is to move toward more made in Alaska courses, and that will be a big area of work for UAS in this new partnership, and that is their intent. But in the meantime, we wanted to make sure that we were continuing to provide districts with support right at the beginning of this year to support kids toward courses that make them eligible for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. So all of the signs are that the partnership is going very well. The districts are very actively engaged in providing feedback and information to primarily Dean Lowe, with whom you spoke yesterday, who is seeing through the effort at this point at the UAS side. So I'll have a better handle on things, I think, after our board meeting on Saturday. I'm wondering if maybe we could provide you with an update, a fuller update at a later time.
Allow me to telegraph a pass for you so you know where to be on the end zone. And it's no secret in past comments, I've expressed some concern that there seems to be a bias toward Made in Alaska, like we're different, we do it up here. While on the other hand, I have a cursory knowledge of a massive base of high quality, exceeding our core, their core, everybody's core content that can be delivered synchronously, asynchronously, et cetera. And let me tell you how deep that goes at this moment. UAA recently reconstituted its Faculty Technology Center. That unit is focused on helping instructors adopt technology for their classroom. And one of the conversations that came out of that is we really need to build a studio. And we need to have a studio, which means cameras, production designers, production equipment, software. And I hearken back to a personal experience I had when Alyeska Central School met its demise, was taken over by UConn Koyukuk, and in this huge warehouse, were floor-to-ceiling racks of obsolete curricular material that they said, this is what we're going to do. And in the back were the bones of a studio with the backdrops and the cameras and the boom mics that were this much dust on them that just went away. So you can hear, I think, a little bit of my passion. And let's really, I hope, have a discussion about why we believe the Alaska bias is worthy of precious resources and what are we doing in the Acklin process to open our eyes and pick our head up and look around and pick and choose the best of the best, which has the benefit of multi-million-dollar production facilities to gather and engage our students. If there are bandwidth issues, I understand there's some that won't work, but just for me personally, and I've had this conversation, I'd love to dig into it, and I'll sharpen my spade.
Hang on, Carly, you had a question?
Yeah, no, I mostly just a comment, and I'm going to leave the Acklin thing alone. I'll just add the commissioner later. Thank you, Susan. You know, in my tenure on the board, I can't remember when we have hit the district with so many biggies at one time. I frankly thought that the teacher evaluation system change, which as a principal I can tell you is going to be very, very tedious and difficult to implement. I don't care how slick the instrument is, there's going to be a lot of interaction, positive and negative interaction, getting this thing going down the road, and then having new standards and having new, aligning curriculum to the standards and all this. So any time that you can get people together to talk about it and to affect some facilitation and change, I commend you for that, because it is going to be difficult, because it is a big, big deal that we are expecting to happen in our school.
If I might just comment, we acknowledge very openly the amount of work facing districts and schools. And I tell them again and again that we're there to support them. And work very hard with the TLS staff that we are coming to this work from a disposition of support to districts and schools. And I feel like a broken record on most days with TLS staff that we are there to support districts and schools. And no matter what we're doing, whether it is with regard to the new work or with regard to continued, even mostly compliance-driven work, that we are to go about that work from a disposition of support to districts and schools. That is our job. So my sense, not just my sense, it's what districts tell us. They need our help. They are asking for our help. I view that all very positively, that the work is being done in partnership with them. It's not being done to them. It's being done in partnership with them. That is certainly presenting the TLS division with some challenges in terms of how we provide them support. And we've worked to get pretty creative on working across programs, PLS is working very closely with assessment, and our federal programs kind of arm is working very closely with our school improvement arm. So we've really, I think, gotten creative in terms of our own capacity and structure in TLS about how can we work across programs and partner with districts toward justice, moving toward implementation of the work. Being thoughtful, being thorough, not a mad rush to get there, but just one step at a time, keeping things moving so that when it is time for full implementation, districts and schools are ready. But I couldn't agree more. It's a lot, and we're all feeling it and just trying to do it in partnership and do it well.
Well, and so you said the magic words as far as I'm concerned, that this in partnership thing, because believe you me, districts think that we have done it to them. You know, I mean, all new standards, they have to align their curriculum with the standards. You know, who's saying that? It's that big state thing. And so to get that affected, working with them and offering the support, I think is really essential.
Excellent. Carly.
Just like what Esther was saying, this is a lot of change in 1 or 2 years. Coincidentally, OSOG is having a student leadership conference in Juneau in October. So if you guys would be interested in coming down and hosting a workshop, I could do it in partnership with you and get you that workshop application form, and then you guys could present directly to students about what is changing.
That would be great.
Okay. I'll get on that.
the timing's going to be tough.
It's the 16th of
We'll do some calendaring here. October is shaping up to be one crazy month with principals conference, all kinds of Edgar is doing an NEA presentation, all kinds of things. So we need to get it.
Definitely.
Well, that's when you and myself are gone for a conference. But we'll definitely work on it because I was approached by that by someone from the OSOG.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Board Member Hall.
Are we asking just general questions on the report, or are we moving through in some fashion?
No, general questions.
I had a follow-up to Esther's and then just a couple of other things. You know, this we're doing it to them notion. The good thing, I mean, I think that's true. What you said is true. But the good thing is that the rest of the nation is also going through this same storm, the whole tidal wave. So they don't feel like we alone are picking on them. You know, and I think teachers are hearing over and over from their colleagues that care, and that's one of the good things about being part of that movement and not holding ourselves out to the side of it is we're able to capitalize on a lot of the energy that's being generated elsewhere. And then I wanted to ask a couple of other questions related to the turnaround time for the department to deal with teacher certification. It said in our report that the changes have resulted in maintaining a 2-week turnaround for the first review of the application. And because people often ask these questions up my way, how long is it taking the department to turn around for like a final? If this is a preliminary review, do you have a sense for how long it is to get a final?
I don't.
Okay.
I can certainly get that information to you. I would need to ask Sandra Meredith.
Okay. I just know sometimes... occasionally we'll hear teachers complaining about the department, and I kind of wanted to be able to say, oh, no, I think they've made changes and good things are happening. It would be nice to have
that. If it's not, if I may say, if it's occasionally, we are well on the road to recovery.
Well, you know, I was trying to be pleasant about it.
And it's a lot better than it used to be.
Oh, my goodness, yes, that's what I say.
And I will say this, and I hear those as well. As much as Susan said that all the efforts they're making, that specific area where they work on teacher certs, I mean, there are many, many days that I leave at 6 or later, and there are several of them there, and I'll pop in on the weekend, and they're in there.
Yeah.
And there's not a harder working division. It's small, but so just to their credit, doesn't mean we don't recognize those challenges and we need to do it as quickly as possible, but they know that. So.
Yes, unless anyone thinks that I don't understand that. When I was on the board in the 80s, Charlie May Moore was in charge of that, and it was just like, yeah. Do you remember Charlie May? Anyway.
remember Charlene.
Well, it was there. They were always, and there were sometimes when it was months and months and the turnaround. So I just am a little tuned to that.
Right.
And then it mentioned that the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Vocational and Adult Education team came in, and they identified areas for improvement. Again, this is an area that's kind of a hot topic up our way, and I was wondering, could you kind of tell us a little bit about what we're doing that's new? What are the areas of improvement that we're working on?
I can say just probably very little about it. I haven't seen the final report from that. What I know they commented on specifically, or we're going to comment on, is what's indicated in the last sentence there. Having talked with Helen Merkin, she indicated that this has before been an area of, finding is the right word, or focus for improvement, and that is the percent of students from
special populations
who are in CTE programs. And so, I haven't seen that final report yet, but I know that was something they were going to comment on specifically.
So
maybe I could follow up on that one as well.
Since that's been raised, so especially at the post, these are areas of improvement that DOE team, and they have, especially at the post-secondary level, if they're coming in to evaluate EED, which is K-12, why are they giving improvement suggestions as if they are looking into the post-secondary issue?
Yeah, it's my understanding that they were looking at CTE programs in our K-12 system, and the percent of, for example, students with IEPs who are enrolled in high school CTE programs.
Just mentions, especially at the post-secondary level. They also identified areas for improvement in the evaluation of local and state programs with an emphasis on special populations in career and tech programs, especially at the post-secondary level. Interesting.
If I could follow up on that and get some clarifying.
I'm just curious.
Okay.
And I would assume that page 2 of her report, bullet point 3 at the very bottom.
Page 1.
Is this your report?
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, we're looking at page 2, which is right here.
Thank you.
It's right at the bottom right here. Yeah, I would be curious, and I would assume a couple other people on the board.
I just had a general information question. So Clear Mind, kind of sitting on the outside. So I'm assuming you got, working groups together when you were developing this, and probably had those teachers that are thought of as the best teachers in the community, do they feel this consternation? Because I'm just going to assume, as a math guy, 2 plus 2 is always 4. You know, you may tell me that I have to get to 2 times 2 is 4 quicker than usual, but I'm going to assume if I'm in a classroom that this isn't going to affect me tremendously because I develop new lesson plans and creative ways to teach regularly. So unless you get an outcry from the best, it would seem that what you're really doing is a good thing anyhow. And I'm just wondering, have the standards changed that much? Are you upsetting the best teachers? Or I'm just curious.
I'm bringing the bottom up.
Yeah, and that should always be done anyhow, so I don't understand the consternation in the room unless you're really irritating those people who do their job.
I think that's an excellent question. When I talk with teachers, I frame it this way, that fractions are still fractions, and prepositional phrases and spot setting, theme, and character we've been teaching those things for a long time. Those are still clearly in our new standards. The difference is that our previous standards were not aimed at preparing kids effectively for what comes after they leave us. They were very much a high school view, and they went only to 10th grade. So standards were not developed from a thinking of what do kids need to know and be able to do when they go into workplace or post-secondary education. The new standards are a pretty major ramp up in that way as compared to our old standards. Give you say a little bit about that, because I could talk about this for the next 3 hours, and that's not what we're going to do. But just in terms of, for example, increased emphasis on nonfiction, the reality is that in K-12, we don't routinely ask kids to read a whole lot of nonfiction. And we certainly don't do it across the content area. So when we do it, it's mostly done in language arts class. The realities are that when kids go into the workplace or post-secondary education settings, they are expected to read a lot of informational text and gain knowledge from that text. Our previous standards didn't adequately emphasize that. So that's a shift. That's an upgrade in terms of our standards. Certainly doesn't mean that we're not still emphasizing fiction. We are. But in addition, we're now also emphasizing informational text. So when I talk with teachers, they get it. They understand why we need an upgrade in our standards. They understand that it's going to mean doing some things different instructionally. I don't get a lot of response from teachers that is questioning these as good for kids. They move pretty quickly into conceptualizing what that's going to mean for their instruction. And they'll start to think about, okay, I've been doing this unit. How might I need to change that up in ways that are consistent with these new standards? So my experience is the teachers go right to the how. They're not engaging in a lot of debate about whether or not this is good for kids. They pretty quickly recognize it is good for kids.
Well, it's good for them. It's a forcing function. That's just the...
So then they just start to think about, okay, how am I going to do this? What's this going to look like? What professional development do I need to feel confident about my abilities to do it? They just start to go right to what great teachers do, and that start to picture their instruction and what that looks like for them and for kids.
Thank you, Dr. McCauley. I'm going to move us forward, if that's okay, unless there's something really burning.
One more
James.
As a board member, this is one thing I hear from teachers. And that is, for instance, like math testing, educating the kids, especially in junior and senior year, math testing in general, it's seen in our district as, well, we just do it to see where we're at. So kids look at it as, no, it doesn't matter. So getting them educated that it's going to matter because teachers' evaluation is going to be based on that. So I've already mentioned it to the administrators and our superintendent. Look, you need to make sure you're educating the kids on the importance of it because the teachers are going to be that. So there are some sticky points where teachers are like, boy, this is a little, they're apprehensive because, it's an uncharted territory for them. And now they're relying on what the kids say. Based on everybody. So there is some education that needs to take place, and that's probably good for OSOG too to know about because, kids are going to go to the least resistance, so you got to try to bring them up. But that's all I have to say is that there is some change in that area because it is uncharted territory for them.
Excellent point. Thank you. Dr. McCauley, thank you very much. Moving to agenda item 8, assessment report. Eric.
Could I ask a favor? Would it be okay for him to move over there?
So you don't have to crane your neck? Yes.
Yes, I will.
Mr. McCormick, you okay with that?
I
all right.
I can see it pretty better.
Commissioner, do you want to introduce anything here?
No, let's just roll right into Eric McCormick.
So we are a little behind on the agenda, so please bear that in mind, folks, as we move forward.
Nope.
Don't tell us we can't ask questions. Come on.
If you want to make your plane home, please bear that in mind.
I
okay.
Just got the notification that our flight's delayed.
Oh!
Oh, good.
That doesn't help your cause.
That's typical.
I'm not capable of keeping that to myself.
Do we know how much delay we're talking about?
12:45.
Oh, okay.
12:45.
Okay, thank you. Mr. McCormick.
All right. And as was just mentioned, with all the changes and the anxieties going with everything being in transition, we were able to address our district test coordinators last week in Anchorage. And we had all but two districts participate, which is pretty impressive to get that many people this time of year represented. And just so you know, district test coordinators range from superintendents, to admin assistants, to people who their primary role is all the functions of assessment. So I do want to thank Chair Mariner. He was sitting at a table with a gentleman who was brand new to Alaska in a rural district, who came from a state that does electronic testing, and he had just realized that the box sitting in his supply closet was a box of HSGQEs that needed to be distributed to all his sites.
I will, since you've mentioned that, Elizabeth Davis at the department, once she found that out, she was just wrapped her arms around support. I mean, it was partnership at its best. So it was great to see that.
So one of the things that we talked about, and this is, I'm very proud to announce this, all but one district are going to be attempting to deliver work keys by computer this fall. I'm not going to tell you which district it is, because we're still working with them, and I'm confident that we will get them to test at least one site. We've gone from less than a quarter of our kids taking the test electronically to all districts attempting. So I think even though it's only one grade, grade 11, I think it's an opportunity for districts that have not yet tested electronically to do it for the first time. And I'll share with you some of the other opportunities we'll have to share. When I addressed the superintendents back in July, I had mentioned to them that as an advisory state in Smarter Balance, we did not have the opportunity to field test. We asked and begged, not begged, we very convincingly told them how the experience would benefit us, and we do have a limited opportunity to field test in the spring. And it would be grades 3 through 8 and 11. And the focus of the field test is to actually have the kids be exposed to the items so they can consider the items for the summative test, which would be appropriate for the summative entry test. The pilot test that we missed out on, which was earlier this year, was to test the delivery system. So we are working with ETS, which is Educational Testing Services. They are the vendor that does the recruitment. So we're working with them to find which we're trying to get a very good cross-section across the state field testing. The window would emulate what the window will be in spring 2015, the last 12 weeks of school year, broken into four chunks of 3 weeks. But I have the assurance that we can go across those chunks. Not everybody's going to have to test in the same week or two. Shortly after we had that news, the information came out from the U.S. Department of Education about double testing waiver and accountability waiver that they go together, meaning if we do have districts participate, schools participate in field tests with Smarter Balance, they can be waived from having to take our state test. And also that would mean their accountability ratings, our ASB ratings, would effectively be frozen for that year. So we are aiming to test up to 5,000 kids statewide. At this point, we're looking at hoping they can to have the full benefit of the waiver. We're encouraging to test both English language arts and math. Otherwise, it could get very complicated. They could do one or the other, or they could just pick one grade, but then they would still have to do the ASCII rating based on the other grade. We're encouraging any school that is selected to test all kids, all grades.
Now you mentioned, sorry, Eric, you mentioned 12-week window for the field testing, but this is again field testing the SBAC, the Smarter Balanced Assessment,
correct.
And that's going to be computer adapted and.
It's going to be computer delivered. It's not yet going to be adapted.
Oh, okay, that's right. It's a fixed one for this
right.
field
this is
test.
Just selecting items.
Okay.
They're not there yet.
And the 12-week window is different from what I believe I've heard. If it goes forward and SBAC is your Smarter Balance is used in spring of 2015, it would be a 4-week window, not a 12-week window.
That was my proposal. We have not designated what that would be. I don't think we want to use the full 12 weeks. I don't think we can. But we still need to determine that once we select the vendor, which I'll get to. But one of the questions I have for our advisory committee coming up is, will there be any difference if we did have a wide window and 4 weeks fairly wide. There'd be a difference between the kids testing in the first week versus that's one question I get quite a bit. So we'll be having that discussion with our technical advisor.
Eric, on the and if I heard you right, or interpreted what I heard right, you talked about freezing the ASB, and if a district had bad ASB scores, what would be their advantage to doing the field testing?
Well,
if they think that they can bring that up.
That is a question that I have, whether or not question for us internally is if we have 1 and 2 star schools, do we want to, would those schools value that opportunity to do the field? I would think they would want to be able to show the improvement, and we'd probably not consider a 1 or 2 star, but that'll be a case-by-case basis. But I would think that those schools want the opportunity to improve on ASCII. I don't think they want to hold that steady for them.
Yeah, I think we should be providing them that opportunity.
Right.
Great question. Any other? Are you just going to keep going?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
I have.
Oh, you have one. Sorry.
Well,
go ahead.
This
yeah.
Field testing. Okay, so the question that gets asked a lot is, you know, about this window and the capacity to do this on using technology. Can you talk just a little bit more about where you see the state's capacity to do this?
We with Smarter Balance, we have a responsibility to get a thing called technology ready. And that responsibility it's one of our few deliverables before we test. It is to identify an inventory of how ready Alaska is. And it's so that the consortium can go have all that information and say, okay, Alaska, 50% of its schools are ready to do this, 70%. So it's an inventory. We, in looking at that, we realized that technology readiness tool is not going to be enough to inform our districts what they need to do next. So what we have done is we are working with our current testing vendor, BRC, to go into much more in-depth technology readiness. And that anxiety hit very hard with our technology coordinators. As you know, they're some of the busiest people in districts. The idea and the anxiety came from we were encouraging them to test every single machine that they were considering using. For smaller districts, that might be a couple labs. It may be manageable. For Anchorage, I believe that included 20,000 computers. There's no way in this short time frame to do that. So our guidance was to pick the most typical schools that you can, and if it works there, it most likely work in other places, but also work on your most challenging places, the places where you have the least bandwidth or the most interruptions start there. So that is information that we are hoping to have. What I've told the districts, they can't complete the entire work, which is it's a very aggressive timeline to get that done. But we've told them what we at least need to know from you, what the percentage of kids you believe will require paper pencil and how many you believe you can do it. And I think once we got that information out to the technology people, the anxiety level dropped. So we're not requiring that you test all the machines, but it's an opportunity for you to test every single machine.
And you have asked for that information by October?
Middle of October. So we're hoping the 11th. And we need that information to, I'm going to get down to the RHP here, and I'll explain why we need that.
Can you go real quick, though? You said something about DRC. Our current vendor is somehow working with some of these districts in more depth because they can't do the simulation of all their machines at once. What exactly does that look like?
What they're doing, we have tools like we're encouraging districts to do what's called a load simulator.
Mm-hmm.
Pick a time that's typical during the day, and we realize it's not an easy thing to do. If we're asking them to do this while kids are in the labs, kids are going through things. So, again, we're presenting it as an opportunity for them to do that. We don't to test it without being a typical day that would be testing probably isn't going to do them a lot of good. They do it at night before school. That'll give them a general idea, but we want them to the thing is if we can identify very specific locations and problems, DRC is willing to do site visits and do some really hands-on work. So it's
got
not
it.
Just the department checking off and saying, you're ready, you're not.
Okay.
ERC, through our contract, is willing to come up and actually work with you.
Got it. Thank you.
Yep. The other thing we're doing is pilot testing, and this is through Data Recognition Corporation. They are going to be pilot testing items, and this is voluntary for all districts. So if we do have schools and districts that we will have schools and districts that will not be able to participate in the field test, we will be doing pilot tests. And that would be, we're doing math only, grades 3 through 8, and that would be March 10th to the 21st. And so a lot of the technology readiness work we're doing right now, setting up to be able to do the pilot.
What's the difference between the field test and the pilot?
The field test is the focus is on the item, so they can develop their item bank for the test. The pilot test is the focus is more on the technology and on the delivery system. That being said, we are going to have about 450 items per grade, and so it's an opportunity for us to have close to 2,600 items in our bank. We have, so, which is pretty significant for us in that amount of time. And again, it's optional, it's voluntary for districts.
And again, field test, the field test done by through ETS. Okay, through Smarter Balance, so that's a field test. The pilot test, done through DRC,
correct.
And doesn't really have anything to do with the Smarter Balance assessment in terms of test items or anything like that.
It's just an opportunity for us to move electronic
networks
and for districts to get a test run.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Eric, you say it's optional by district. Okay. When they tune into this, do you get a wide selection? I mean, do you get big districts and little districts? Or I guess I'm thinking of Anchorage. You know, I know they have a rife of problems with all that technology stuff. But you get a pretty good Duke's mixture.
We do. And I can tell you I've been talking with Mike Fleckenstein in Anchorage. Probably the longest that I've gone. Being a gnome, I haven't talked to him in last week. it's a big thing, but Anchorage is committed to it. I've had several districts call me, and they're ready. They want to jump in and give it a shot. And some districts are considering whether or not they want to substitute that for the SBA. Sure. It's not required. If they want to level test, they could.
And it's important to note that with only 5,000 students being tested, you know, we're looking at in Anchorage being real specific about it'll be one high school, one middle school, one elementary, you know, and doing that in very strategic places around the state. So even though it's optional for districts, we're not just putting it out who wants it. We're really trying to be intentional about selective so we get that good sampling.
Board Member Hull, go ahead.
Yeah, so the field test, the pilot test is in March. Field test is?
Last 12 weeks. So we need to last 12 weeks of the school year.
Okay. And then one other thing. There was a big hubbub up my way relative to could they do it on iPads. And the answer is?
The answer is with pilot testing, we will not be able to do iPads yet. DRC system is not yet ready for that. The Smarter Balance system will have to support iPads. So I would encourage I would anticipate all the major testing vendors are getting to the point where they're able to use tablets.
Okay.
So with the field test, there's the possibility of using the tablets this spring for field testing.
Field test, correct.
Okay.
Pilot test.
Right.
Pilot test will be
got it.
More traditional.
Thank you.
Can I just ask a follow-up about that? Because the pilot test, as I understand it, is about their technology readiness, kind of focused on that, and the iPads won't be part of it, can you help me understand why, when people are concerned about it, what I should say maybe is what I'm looking for. Well, how do you see that as not hindering their ability to say whether or not they're technologically ready?
I would say the most test vendors are not there with an electronic delivery system. Is that the one that won the contract to do it for the consortia? They will be ready to do that. So I would anticipate our current bidder and any other expected bidder on our team will be closed. Otherwise, they won't be able to support the left time.
Okay.
It's just timing. They're not there yet. They'll need to be.
But districts can feel like if they participate in both the field test and the pilot test, that districts can feel like they're going to get the information they need to know whether or not they can use iPads for
Correct. Going
forward. Okay.
Go ahead, Eric.
Okay. The next thing on my list here was the app sheet.
Wait. So are we moving from the
We can jump back later.
Okay.
Go ahead, Eric.
Okay. In your packet, there are couple different documents. One is a sorted list by district and school name that shows the scores, the grades, the community, and the ASCII rating. And it's the first document. The second document is a short summary that shows of the 550 schools that we rated, how many were 1-star through 5-star. And I can tell you that the second table on that page shows the number of kids representing our students. And 92% of our students were in schools that were 3 stars or higher. So that means those 1- and 2-star schools represent 80% of our students. And I think that's very positive. I can also say that
1 and 2 stars?
Correct.
That represents nothing.
So if you look at the, you add up the 10% of 5-star, the 50% of the 4-star, and the 31% of the 3-star, it's up to 92%. And as Dr. McCauley mentioned, the amount of collaboration that we've had within the department, I believe we've now had at least 6 people in the department present ASCII very successfully. And so I think that's a tribute not only to the staff digging in and learning that, but ASCII itself is much easier to understand, a lot less complex. I did not miss having to run UIT last summer. With all of the confidence intervals and the safe harbors, a lot of behind-the-scenes calculations, those don't exist with ASCII. So we're trying to be more and more transparent with those reports. But overall, the experience has been very positive. The only districts or the schools that we hear from are the ones that miss by a fraction of a point. You got to have a cut point somewhere, but those are the arguments. We're going to have that in the letter.
I just want to make a quick comment that it was pleasing to me that we really had nary a ripple our way with folks. I think people understood they weren't inclined to jump to traumatic conclusions, and I think it was a successful rollout. And being aware of another state that had the legislature pass a grading system as well as the State Department doing a star rating system, or a system related to the waiver, man, that is a confusing deal for people. And so nary a ripple was not the response there. You know, folks trying to figure out why they had a lower grade in one and something else in the other. So I'm really pleased that we're where we are.
The one thing I would like to mention is that for the first time since I've been commissioner, we're really hearing people talk about how their schools are doing. With AYP, nobody didn't make it. Couldn't really figure out what you were going to do to change it. But, just if you watch the news reports for the following weeks after that came out, we hear people talking about, I had superintendents saying, I had this many schools, be 3- or 4-star schools. We just need to get the attendance up here. We've had principals say, we're a 3, but we're shooting for 5. And
yeah.
It's the first time there's been that kind of conversation. So just that in and of itself has been a real positive,
Very
I think.
Point.
Esther?
You said the magic word as far as I'm concerned, it's positive. I mean, I was so excited when I saw the star rating. I mean, our big high schools in my district were never going to get by that AYP thing. And this was such a positive feedback for all. I bet those principals are doing handsprings down the hallway because it's the first time that, we have recognized what was going on that was good. We have just capitalized and kept, and I know we had to do it that way. But only, 3 kids were absent, so, you're not a non-achieving school or whatever.
Or failing.
And this gave some positive, I was really excited.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions? Under the arm.
Go ahead.
The final document in the package is an abstract on the RFP, request for proposal that we released in late August. And the primary purpose of the RFP is to find a vendor that can deliver the services. You've referred to them as wraparound services, wrapping around Smarter Balance. The Smarter Balance is providing a task and items, but we still need to find a vendor to assist us with delivering the task. And with doing all the reports and all the psychometric information. So we have required that any bidder that bid include these wraparound services. And so specifically, they need to address grades 3 through 8 and 11, summative assessments, which would start in spring of 2015. Also, they're required to provide assessments for interim assessments, which will be delivered throughout the school year. And then we did break out 9 and 10 separately, 3 through 8 and 11. With Smarter Balance and a requirement of ESEA is that we test grades 3 through 8 and 11. With our ASPE system, our ASPE model, and our teacher evaluation model, we require that continuity, and that's why we have grade 9 and 10 in here. But we thought it was important to have those budgeted out separately for future consideration. As a cost option also, we have we're allowing vendors, if they want to, we encourage them to submit a proposal developing a custom assessment. So it would be another SBA, but not SBA. Based on our new standards, it would be something developed for last. And a third option is if there is a commercially available, like off the shelf, or if there's one out there that they can prove aligns to our standards, then that is a. And very last option is to provide a proposal for formative resources. So Smarter Balance has a whole toolkit of formative assessments for schools to use. We're asking them as another option to provide that.
Right.
How many do you expect reasonably bids to? What's typical?
Typical would be, the last time we did bid, we only had one responsive bidder. We had two bidders. But previous to that, I believe we had 6 or 7. However, in the call we had a call where the vendors could ask questions. We had over 20.
Excellent.
On call.
Good deal. Yes. That always makes me feel better when you only get one bidder at it's obvious, I think, that you're kind
well,
of...
Well, and we can tell by the questions being presented, some are very large, some are extremely small, just by the questions, just their lack of knowledge about education.
What role might the board play in terms of... I mean, the board has heard me ask in the past questions about even the budget, getting an early look at the budget before it's done so that we can have some, at least, guidance input. What opportunities exist for the board to have input on the RFP process?
Well, at this point, the RFP is largely procurement issue. So
do you have an evaluation committee?
We will, yes.
Is there opportunity for the board to have input in that process, perhaps?
I need to check. I believe it's limited to the state of Alaska employees.
It is, as I understand it.
So we can follow
up
on that.
I've served the health insurance committee that we had for not this current one at the state of Alaska, but the prior one that went to ended up going to Wells Fargo. We actually had a union employee in the room as an advisor, and we also had a hired gun, Buck Consultants, who helped craft the RFP, was also invited to facilitate the meeting and to provide input. So, there are ways to skin that for, this contract was hundreds of millions of dollars over 3 years. I hope this one isn't hundreds of millions of dollars over 3 years.
Millions.
But, yeah, we were seeing, frankly, billions of dollars flow out over the life of that contract and procurement in the Department of Administration. Found a way to make that happen. So just an idea that rather than simply being a standby at the end of the process. Perhaps there's value in having somebody on board have some insight into the evaluation. Anyway, just an okay. Observation.
The only other thing I was going to mention is just this last Friday, Smarter Balanced Governing States had their first call on developing our. So we're a little bit ahead of the governing states as far as getting something out. I'm really proud of that. We got into the consortium late, but we got our information together knowing what we wanted to do, and we're providing more options than the governing states, putting all their eggs in the basket.
So may I go, thank you for that, but may I go back to Board Member Shire's train of thought? So if what I'm hearing is what I heard from you, Eric, the evaluation committee, the way it was going to play out or maybe still will play out, if there is no board input, we basically are just informed after a decision is made as to what assessment is going to be used.
I cannot speak to the prior assumption. I believe that was
awesome. I can speak to the of how we've done 2004, and the way that it always operates is the board selects the standards, and then actually in regulation it says the commissioner will select an assessment that fits that. So what the commissioners in the past, and actually what the department is doing now, is keeps the board informed of the RFP process, sort of what you're looking for, but really the competitive bid process is one that you rank out those proposals at the end of the day against a rubric that's already been pre-designed. It's out there. It's part of the RFP that says, here's how we're ranking you, and you're looking for quality and cost. A huge part of the RFP is cost, and then the less but important is quality, which vendor can do this at the quality level we want at the most efficient price.
And the team is not considered the price. That is
you're right. The team never looks at that. That's just scored based on the price. It just comes in and scoring. And so the team does the quality review. The proposals, and Eric actually participated in the 04 one. I remember you were part of the team, but we were evaluating really two companies. We had two companies, and the third was really non-responsive. I'd say the combined binders meant you were looking at that much, and you really have to have a pretty good technical eye for all the requirements in the RP and matching that up to the scoring guide. It's a pretty exhaustive process, but it's all done against a pretty transparent system, because any one of those bidders can come in and say, we didn't get it, and we want to know every detail of why we didn't, because there's a period where they can contest it. So it's pretty transparent after it's done, so that anyone can take a look at that. But so the process to date has involved just the state employees, which is required in the procurement process. You can get changes to that, which is what you were speaking to. You have to go to the Division of General Services to get permission to do anything that would be an adjustment out of the normal operations, which is part of another department.
But the commissioner is involved, obviously.
Recommendation to the commissioner, that RFP team. But so at the end of the day, though, what he would have the option to do is to cancel the procurement or really accept the procurement, the scoring.
Right.
At any point, he could say, this just isn't in the best interest of the state, and cancel and ask for a new procurement process.
So,
can't really switch the scoring unless he chooses to be on the team. That normally doesn't happen.
From the standpoint, though, one of the reason I suggest perhaps exploring from General Services their sideboards on what it would take to have that is, I think it might be helpful to the board and the board's public. Hey, we got to look at this before there was a final. We were coached and trained on the proposal review process. We were educated on how that process took place. And I've seen the hand truck full of boxes come into my office before. You close the door and for weeks, perhaps, you're doing nothing but the minimum of your other job and evaluating these through a score of 1 to 4 or 1 to 5 or however it's set up. At the outset, I appreciate you mentioning that before the proposal goes out on the street, there must be a rubric in place mm-hmm. on how it will be scored, knowing that there is also some subjectivity. I don't know, you've been through many, I'm sure, and Eric, you've been through them, and it's amazing how you can sit down at a table when everybody's independently scored and said, well, wait a minute, I gave them a 5 in this category, you gave them a 2. So there certainly is, even within those strict guidelines, some variability that may come to the table based on the perspective of a particular rater. And that's one reason why I recommend a rating process that may be a little less perfunctory and a little less administrative, knowing that the focus of the department is certainly on getting the best deal for the best reasons based on that good listening that you do to what the board intends. But for the future, when we make a selection and roll this out to the public, there may be some value to the department and to the board in having some review beyond simply coming to the board and saying, we did all this work and here's what we say should be done.
And if board members Shire's suggestion doesn't have any ability to get traction, potentially the commissioner, when the commissioner has all this information at his fingertips and has to make a decision, at that point the commissioner could inform the board and there could be a discussion before a decision was made. I don't want to put the commissioner on the spot, but
the danger of that is risking that procurement process before it becomes transparent. We'll bring out things that haven't been decided yet, and this is not to keep anybody in the dark, but to take something that we have legal responsibility for following, and going through a very strict process. It's not easily transferred to, who likes this one and who likes, a democratic type of, it's a scoring process. It's a very rigid scoring process, and I picture what we did with the maps, great process. But if we were to do that with this, we would open ourselves up to a huge liability, and it would really be an inappropriate way to, we couldn't even do that. But even if we could, the first vendors that didn't get it would say, what? I mean, who decided that? So it really has to be within that.
So sorry to interrupt, but what I'm trying to make sure that I'm clear on is if that is not able to happen, what Board Member Shire was discussing in terms of potentially interjecting a board member or, some board members into that process, the procurement process, if that just happens the way it's always happened with state employees, for example, at some point, that process ends, a recommendation, a score, goes to the commissioner. And at that point, the commissioner gets to decide to move forward if it's in the best interest of the state. At that point, I guess, is what I was suggesting. Potentially, you consider having a conversation with the board at that point. But, again, I don't want to speak for you on that. You can ruminate on that.
My sense is that would be perilous even then for the commissioner to have this whole process go through and all the check boxes done and a recommendation bubbling to the top, and then the commissioner coming in and saying, no, we're not going to do that. I think that would put the commissioner at risk.
We didn't have a public public meeting with vendors.
Right.
I do agree that that's
right. So my suggestion was certainly not that we just pull the covers off and everybody has a chance to pick their favorite, but somehow in the process of board governance of what we do in the department, to be cognizant of opportunities for the board to serve in evaluation elements, not the least of which is large-scale procurements that will affect all the school districts in the state. Time and availability, I know, is another issue. But if there were some way, perhaps there may be somebody who would be interested on the board with interest or expertise who would care to.
I just want to throw out one other caution, and I actually probably, it's something the commissioner may want to discuss with the Attorney General's office. It's a interesting idea, but I just, the one caution I'd have is you're the governing body. You've set a regulation saying the commissioner selects this. Then you have a member of the governing body recommending something to someone you evaluate as part of the committee. I don't know if that creates an awkward situation that is confusing. It may or may not, but I just think that's part of the internal discussion that needs to happen before we make any decision.
Sure.
Because I wouldn't want to create something that creates potentially a confusion in the governance structure anyway.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Yes, Sue.
I think we have to come back and say, so where are the policy points? You know, I mean, that's our job is policy-related questions. And I can appreciate what Board Member Shire is trying to say here, but I really think I would oppose such a suggestion because I think that we really need to stay, you know, allow that sort of administrative function to occur without us. There may be situations such as the ones you described where it's appropriate. I wouldn't think in this case, and with it being as high stakes as it is for all the kids in Alaska, that we would want to do that because I think then it, even if it were appropriate, it muddies the water. But I think the real question is what should the board be thinking about relative to this test? Where are the policy points, you know, the places where we should be setting policy, and I think we've certainly done that with standards, and you know, that's one policy place. But I have a question related to the other, which is you're going to get these RFPs back, and then you're going to have options about, you know, will it be our own test? Will it be smarter balanced? Will it be – one of the things I've relayed to the commissioner is I said to one legislator, you know, oh, I hope you won't decide right now which test it should be, you know, as people are gathering information about them, because we want the best test, and we don't yet have enough information, and we kind of need to decide what road we'll travel down. So at what point will the board be included in the decision about which of these pathways we pursue, or is that just something that is the commissioner's to determine?
The way this RFP is written, it really falls within that procurement process. And if I think back, just contextually, it would be the first time, I think, that the state board has engaged in choosing an assessment. They didn't engage in choosing the assessment for the SBAs. They actually didn't have a decision when we joined SBAC. And so if we didn't put out an RFP and we went with SBAC, nobody'd blink an eye. So, I'm not trying to defend, be defensive here, you know. And our goal is never to be, you know, elusive by any means. But it is a unique situation. I honestly think it's because of the conversations that are taking place around the Common Core that this assessment becomes a part of that conversation. And maybe it's because it's electronic. So maybe that's a slight difference, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we did weigh in on WorKEY. I mean, we talked about WorKEY's. Obviously, the department had brought it to us, and WorKEY's is just in regulation, right? It's not in statute.
No, it's a statutory.
WorKEY's itself is statutory.
Oh, WorKEY's is all
regulation.
It's all regulation.
So
okay.
Anyway, so
but,
we've had.
But what
yeah.
you. But to just what you did is selected I can't remember if we actually used WorKEY's or did we use
career readiness.
So you made a policy decision to implement an assessment, but WorKEY's was the only one that fit that. But if there were more like that, we'd have to run a competitive process to find those. Anyway, I'm sorry for that.
Well, I just want to clarify.
Hang on real quick, and I just, again, the state board a little, I mean, we didn't have a discussion about SBAC and joining SBAC, but at some point a board member did weigh in on, I mean, I had to sign my name to that, you know. So, anyway, yes. Sue.
Well, I think that we want to talk about what is policy decisions, and I think Les kind of, you know, was talking about that. I mean, whether we go with smarter balanced, make our own test, or go with the test that's off the shelf, because this is kind of high stakes in the public discussion, I really believe there is a policy, there's a place for the board to set policy relative to that. And I think we don't want to do it before the RFP. I think it's smart to send out the RFP and see what we get back. But I think there is a policy, an appropriate role for the board in whether or not we're part of the larger consortium or we build our own test. That's kind of a, that's a policy. It's not driven by the price nor the vendor. The price and the vendor, I think, you know, or the, you know, the bid process, the how much it's going to cost and the vendor, I think it's perfectly appropriate for the department to make a recommendation relative to that. But I think there is a policy issue related to kind of more succinctly said, which test. I wouldn't want legislators making that, you know, and people are talking about it. But I think that it would be inappropriate if the board really has no say about that.
James,
didn't
thank you.
Didn't weigh in on when the basically our curriculum standards, and that's where we weighed in, and all the tests are based on those standards. Is that not right?
That's correct.
That's where our level of policy is on the standards. Once that happens, it's their job to test on those standards. So we have weighed in on what the standards are. Is that
correct? But I think this is, here's how I think this is different. I agree with you. Because
okay.
I think that is, that was certainly an appropriate place for the board. But relative to this kind of assessment, one of the big issues, and I believe it's a policy issue, is do we do our own test and therefore we set our own cut scores and we go back to where we were previously. That's kind of a, that is a policy, that's a policy point in my mind, is whether or not we're going to, you know, be part of this larger effort with a smarter balance is going to have cut scores. And we would be able to compare across states. And I think that will be a lively discussion with legislators and others. And if we say, you know, the board wasn't even involved with that, I think it calls into question, you know, the strength or weakness of the board. I mean, I think it really is a basic, it's kind of like at a school board level, the superintendent decides which vehicle, you know, based on cost and vendor and all of that. But the school board would be responsible for saying, we want to test this number of grades, we want to, not only will it be aligned with our standards, but in this case, we want to set the cut scores, if you will, the proficiency levels, or somebody else will set those. Those are, I think, outside just the procurement process.
So,
but that's just my view.
Thank you, Sue. Did you have something else, Jim? Or
no.
Les?
The only thing I guess I just need to make sure that the board does read 06737, and just bear with me, I'll read the first line. Because you did make a policy decision at one point, the board, maybe not the one sitting here, but the commissioner shall select a standards-based test to estimate the degree to which, you know, students have mastered those skills. So that really is what this procurement process is going to get at, and it actually invites proposals from different types of assessments. And that procurement process at the end of the day may come out that a commercially available product does the job at a quality level. The RFP detail calls for any, if you submit a proposal, you have to tell us how you're going to tell how our students do relative to the rest of the nation. And this process at the end of the day picks that. And so when the process concludes, the commissioner will get a recommendation that says, here's what we deem is the highest quality and best cost assessment. It could be wrapped around to SBAC, then you have the SBAC cost in. It could be some commercially available product. Then he has to either say, yes, I agree with it, or cancel the entire procurement. But the test will get selected at that point following this regulation, the way it follows through. The steps that next come is, how do you set the cut score? Well, in the past, the board has set the cut score. They would continue to do that. However, if you go into the consortium product, there are certain agreements that you need to make, and those kinds of things will come to the board. There has to be participation guidelines. That's a board policy. That will come to the board. So anything affecting testing that's in your current regs, you'll have to be some discussion back to the board on that.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. And I'm going to ask us to move a little bit forward here. I know the commissioners listened very carefully to this entire conversation. It's been a great one. And I guess I'm just going to leave that conversation with you, and you can let us know if you have any decision to move any other direction, maybe the direction Board Member Hull was mentioning, or anyway.
I just want to be on the record. So
yes,
I just want to make a statement on the record that I believe that the board should be involved,
right,
and that it's like a curriculum at a school district. You know, it's the how it's done part can be, you know, done by the administration, but the what is a board policy. And I think that this is maybe in a gray area for some folks, but for me, when a school board looks at assessments there, the board is involved with it and would have the ability to say thumbs up or thumbs down. The administration makes a recommendation, but I really think that we'll be in a not a good place if folks feel like the board didn't even have any involvement with those three major options. It's not the down in the weeds detail, but these three major approaches to delivering the assessment. So I just want to be on the record that I would support having the board respond to that recommendation from the commissioner after the procurement process. I don't want us down in the procurement process.
Thank you, Board Member Hull. Commissioner has been taking notes. Okay. Moving forward, Eric, is there anything else in particular, or can we just throw a couple more questions your way? And we do need to try to move on.
That concludes my report.
Okay. I have one myself. The waiver that we've been from the feds requires 3rd through 8th grade and 11th. So we have a requirement of 11th with whatever we go with. So are we going to potentially look at taking the work keys off people's plates because this new assessment is going to basically, hopefully, you know, take care of that CTE kind of assessment that the work keys was put into place for? I would love to see not testing our juniors twice if we can help it. That's my take.
I would welcome that conversation.
Okay.
I think there is value in the work keys, what they receive that they won't necessarily receive through a new college and career test, but I value that.
Thank you.
It is
sooner rather than later.
Work keys is tied to the performance scholarship at this point, though.
Correct.
Yes, it is.
True.
In that conversation, we have to talk about what the idea was with work keys and is that really happening? Employers using it and students using it when they're applying for jobs.
And again, APS regulations, this board can affect those changes if it's so desirous. Board Member Hull.
Just a question. Can you help me understand better the performance portion of the test and how that might?
Sure. One of the work groups that I've signed up with is Smart Balance's performance test. There are three components to the performance test: stimulus presentation, information processing, and scoreable performance. Being able to score it. These are typically performance tasks are typically going to measure those skills that you can't easily do using a multiple choice or a instructor. So it'll be research involved. So there are examples of performance tasks out on Smarter Balance website. They haven't. They will not be included in the but they will be. Be very similar. They could have a piece of text that they have to do research and they have to produce. Again, it'll be across multiple standards. But at this point, it could include an oral presentation. So the question for us is, what is our involvement of our teachers? Will it be locally scored? Will it be passed on to be centrally scored? And those are questions I still have. Performance tasks, I've not been able to find them fleshed out as much as the other.
And then the constructed response, can you tell me a little about that? How will those portions be scored? Because teachers up our way are interested.
At this point, there are some items that fall kind of in between multiple choice and constructed response. Kind of those, we actually tested a couple of those last spring. Ones where you can select more than one. They pick three of the four, two of the four. those can still be computer scored, but there will still be some hand scoring. And as an advisory state, I can find out how involved our teachers, or if our teachers are involved in scoring. Don't know yet.
But at least the first cut will be done by computers, and then human eyes may be laid on it where there's gray area, or
do you have a sense? I think there's some items that will have to be, some of the constructors' phones will have to be scored by humans.
Uh-huh.
The artificial intelligence isn't quite there yet, and I don't think anybody wants to, we're talking about accountability, I don't think anybody wants to stake trust in that yet. There will be some, those items with the multiple choice selection, those can be computer scored, but they'll still be required to be hand scored. I just don't know yet what our involvement is. But I'll find out.
Thank you.
And Eric, you and I talked a little bit about performance item, performance, what are they called, the tasks?
Yeah, performance.
Yesterday. And I know you said you are going to get more information on those, because they are going to be part of the required, if SBAC, Smarter Balance Assessment, is chosen, part of that assessment.
Correct.
A pretty significant part of that assessment, from what I understand.
Correct.
So we got a couple hours of computer-adapted testing on the electronic device, and then we have a couple hours of these performance items, these performance tasks, which, I again, like Board Member Holt, I would like to have more information on those, because
okay.
I don't know if that means that teachers are going to have to work with their students ahead of time. I mean, I've heard certain things and seem to be reading certain things along those lines. And as I mentioned to you yesterday, if we are teaching to the test of that degree, you know, a month advance, or I would like to know that.
Well, as a new member of that Smarter Balance Working Group with Performance Pass, I should have some answers.
Okay. Yes, Board
Member. And I know you want to move on, but this is just really important, and I almost forgot. I'd like to go back to some things that Representative Wilson said in her testimony, because I think you have some answers for this. She talked about we can't do one size fits all. So I'm not exactly sure what she meant by that, but I think what she's talking about is, you know, we need to meet the needs of students, and she used the example of, you know, how do you test a fourth grader? You know, will the fourth grade test be able to test kids who are well below grade level? And I think there are good answers for it. So if you could maybe talk about that.
Yes, using the computer adaptive test, there's a capacity to go a grade above and a grade below. So if a kid is up to a year behind, we can measure that. I'm not going to tell you if the kid is three or four grades. The test is not designed to have that much range. To have that much range, we have those kids testing 15 or 20 hours field. So the adaptive testing portion will allow it to go up to one grade level above, up to one. So it's a range of three grades. There is that limitation. But I would question a kid at a first grade reading something. I think they need to be considering that kid's that and giving them the most required space.
So they would have the flexibility to do that?
Well, they have to test in the grade they're enrolled.
So if a fourth grader, help me understand, if a fourth grader were reading at the second grade level, let's say, it's outside the range of the test, would that be an inappropriate test for the student? Will it give teachers information they can utilize?
It should be taking the fourth grade test. So it will not tell them specifically to testing to.
But it will show that they haven't mastered fourth grade work and kind of to what degree they have not. Yes. And then she also talked about, you know, the need for broadband and all of that. Could you talk a little about the issues there?
Sure. And that's the reason why we have the two technology readiness tools. We're trying to really focus on which communities need the most assistance. I've had one meeting with GCI, with Amy Lloyd. She's asking us, what can we do? So we're trying to put that information again. I've asked each time she's in Juneau if she has time to stop by. There are some local caching opportunities that GCI has that I didn't know exist. I have asked her to identify the communities that she knows she's been to. So we're trying to merge that in the pilot testing. asking for consideration. But we are getting down, each December, our technology coordinator department collects bandwidth numbers, the number of computers, all that. And so when we, before we even started doing the technology writing, we shared that back with the district and said, here's the minimum requirements for testing. Here's what you've told us you can do. Here's how many kids, according to just these numbers, no other considerations, no testing on the machine, this is how many kids we can test. And I can tell you, just based on that analysis, not looking at individual machines, most districts do have it passed within a 4-week window.
And for those who don't, they can do paper and pencil. We will have that option available.
Correct. And with Smarter Balance, that opportunity is every 3 years. But we are encouraging districts to get as many kids as they can to test electronically just because the experience of having the computer adaptive, they will not have that experience with paper and pencil test. With a fixed format test, there's not a lot
of change. You can't
adapt. Every kid takes the same test.
I know Esther had a question.
Just a quick question. Eric, Jim really said something that really disturbed me. 2 hours of this on the computer and 2 hours of performance. How long is this thing going to be?
I have the estimates, and before I give you numbers, these are untimed tests. So the kids are not going to be cut off. But for the math test, grades 3 through 5, they're believing most kids will get through the computer adaptive test in an hour and a half. Performance task would be 1 hour. So for 3 through 5 math, we're talking about a total of 2.5 hours. For English language arts, the performance task is a little longer, 2 hours. And as we get up to, so combined, we're looking at
1.5 for the computer, the same as the math?
Correct. So overall, grades 3 through 5, they're estimating the average kid will have about 7 hours of testing. Grade 6 through 8, 7.5 hours, and then grade 11, 8.5 hours. So that's including the computer adaptive test for English language arts literacy and math, as well as performance tests. So the longest performance task would be with English language arts. About an hour for math, an hour and a half for math would be 11. I can share, and I've got all this information. This is for this is what they anticipate for most students.
So, Eric, Dottie, can you help me remember, and Commissioner, I would like to, because it seems like there's enough interest at the board level, some of that meet, some of those details, at our teleconference, add it to our agenda. October 28th, we're going to be adding, so this is the 3070 waiver teleconference, televideo conference. We're going to add Randy's staff, and we're going to now, I believe, unless I hear from the board that they would not like this meat and potatoes for the agenda, and maybe we can now move on knowing that we're going to have this level.
Just one last thing for those who will be listening to this meeting or might, that would not be in one sitting. Can you just kind of clarify how those hours might be dealt with?
Correct. There will be flexibility on how they arrange those. We will most likely, the way we do it at the SBAs, we will probably come up with recommendations how to do it. But the flexibility is with each state. So we can develop that. I have not seen the recommendations as far as the order, which days to do that, other than they have established the rules.
Eric, how long do our present SBAs take?
Each test typically takes 1 hour to 2 hours for most students. So if you think it's reading, writing, and math, 5.5 to 6 hours. So it is more time. But what we will have with this, so we don't get currently with our SBAs, first of all, you need, in order to test the full breadth of our standards, they need to have that exposure, that many items. We have items that we don't currently assess in our SBAs. We have some in our old standards, not assessed. Also, what we don't have with our SBAs that we will need, absolutely crucial for our teacher evaluation, our scores, we do not have a vertically aligned scale for all scores. We're vertically articulated, which means at the point of proficient, we're confident that a year's growth, we can measure that at the proficient. But if you go down scale to a lower achieving or a much higher achieving, say at 500 at one grade to 500 at the other grade, don't match. We need that level of precision to do teacher evaluation as we're measuring growth. Our SBAs were developed to, the focus was around proficiency. Now we're going to a growth measure. And to get that level of precision beyond the proficiency, we need them to have that exposure and that's kind of the test.
So I'm going to thank you, everyone. I'm going to have us take a break, but at the same time, I've done the math based on your 12:45.
It's changed now. It's at 12:38.
Yep.
Oh, so we have a little less than an hour still to get through quite a few reports. So please take a five-minute break. Be back in five after.
Thanks, Jim. I apologize
for
a long conversation, but it's
good to have robust
before asking.
I appreciate your question.
Yeah, thanks, Barb.
code in 5 minutes.
All right, we're back online with the LIO. We're going to go ahead and get started with Superintendent Randy Hawk, the Mount Edgecombe report. Go ahead, Randy.
Okay, in the interest of time, I'm going to just hit some high points, and then if you have questions, we can go through that. A lot of my report is the typical beginning of the year stuff. First one is enrollment. When we submitted this report, we were not finalized with enrollment, and what we had is we had a maximum of 408 students at one time. We're down to 406 now. We did have kind of a curious thing that happened this year. When we went on our first trip to Anchorage to get kids, we had some kids that failed to, at the 12th hour, decided not to come to Edgecombe. And so the following week, we had to get another 15 kids to backfill for our numbers. So we're currently at 406 for our enrollment. And hopefully we're soon to be past the homesick wave that we typically have. Our FPA scores, you can see what they are there. We compared Mount Edgecombe to the state and then also kind of the change from what we had from year to year. Pretty good scores except in the area of 10th grade reading. That went down significantly, and we're looking into that. High school qualifying exam, we're pleased with those scores. Less kids should have the second go-around coming up here shortly. The Alaska State Performance Index. This was new this year. We didn't really know how we were going to grade out, what was to be expected. And it's one of those things, once you already get the information, you go back and play the shoulda, coulda, woulda, and which all schools did. And one of the things that was interesting, we found out that we got 91.26 points, which put us at a four-star school. So then the question was, how many five-star? How many four-stars? Where do we rank? We do those typical things. And a lot of configurations there, but we looked at the 9-12 high schools, not the 7-12s and that type of thing. And we were the fourth-ranked school in the state for 9-12, so we were pleased with that. There was one five-star school. We could have gotten second if we had another half point. And then we did look at our attendance rate, and we were at 95.99. And if we had gotten 1/100 more, we would have got a half point more.
So get that kid out of bed the next time.
I know. And work keys, two more kids would have given us another point. So those were the easy things, and those are the things that I think you know, Eric has been hearing from people around the state of how they can improve their scores, and we're already planning to do that, working towards that. And also, parts that we didn't do very well in was our academic achievement and school progress. Like I said, we did drop in our 10th grade reading, and that did impact those parts of your school. So we're working on that. New teachers and staff. These are all the people that represent Mount Edgecombe that are new. We still have two openings in our support staff. We have one teacher, Kevin Gwynn, that is new this year. And another one I want to point out is Xinying Yang, is our Confucius classroom teacher. So we did get a Confucius classroom started. She's come over and has fit in very well, and we're sharing her with Sitka High. So Sitka High has her in the mornings to start Chinese language over there, and we have her in the afternoons to help support our Chinese program.
Did you have the program going when we were down there?
Mm-hmm. Pardon?
I thought I remember seeing Chinese characters in the classroom.
Yeah, we've had Chinese there for many, many years. So yeah. We've got this was kind of in conjunction with Confucius Institute in Anchorage and also with sister schools in China. So. Advisory board, you're going to be looking at that. We have four positions open, which is unusual. That's almost half a turnover, but that's what we have this year, and they're on the consent agenda. In-service items, a lot of professional development dealing with the new standards, curriculum work, looking at our data, setting data goals in the PLCs, typical things, and again, we have to do our in-service at one shot at the beginning before the kids come, because when the kids are here, we have school. Advanced Ed, we're finally starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel. This board asked that Mount Edgecombe look at accreditation, and at the time that was with Northwest. We went through the step process to get ourselves geared up with that, and then there was a switchover between Northwest to Advanced Ed, and And that was still a little gray area before we were able to move ahead. And we put in our paperwork, and we are, I forget the exact date, but we are going through our review on-site visit in April.
Hmm.
So now we have to put together all the documentation and fill out all the paperwork in regards to that, and we should be good for accreditation at that time.
Randy, who makes up the on-site visit team? You know? Who picks that?
I don't know who that is yet. We'll get that coming from Advanced Ed, who that will be.
They pick the team. Okay.
And then our maintenance, you can see that a lot of things going on. We were down half our staff. They had a full plate to do. We had three major construction projects going on, and those were all in the process while that was happening when we're undermanned. So a great appreciation for what our maintenance staff did with everything that was happening this summer. Our construction projects, just to bring you up to date on that, lower campus heating, done. A good 6 months behind, but it is done. Our upper campus and our hot water system was ahead of schedule, and that's completely done. And you've heard me say many times that that's been our number one concern about whether or not we would have heat at any given moment with our outdated system. And the last one that they're starting on poles, which means when kids leave to go down to lower campus, the heat goes down automatically, the lights go off automatically. Don't have to worry about that, and it's going to really save a lot of energy costs from our system when that happens. So that'll be really, really good. And the last thing is our aquatic center. We got one phase done, and that was the demolition of the powerhouse. That really went pretty well. You never know when you're into that older facility what kind of things need to be abated. It worked out pretty good, and so it's completely gone, sites filled, and now we're in the process of working on conceptual design and moving forward. So.
Find any gold under the old site?
No.
Any chance, or
no.
and no hazardous materials more than, I don't want to talk about it, never mind.
Esther.
Randy, I was interested that you have a couple of AmeriCorps teachers. What does that cost you? How do you go about that, and what does that cost you?
The AmeriCorps, they aren't teachers. One is that helps in the office and just odds and ends job. The other one helps on the residential side. And those are basically about $14,000, $15,000 a week. The school district has an AmeriCorps program that they help get a bunch of support throughout the community, and we get two of them.
Hmm. Okay. They aren't teachers. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments for Randy? Well, thank you so much, Superintendent Hawk. Excellent report, and looks like you're doing great things.
Being on a 4-star school, I think that's pretty terrific, frankly.
Oh, it's kind of nice. Some of our staff were disappointed to be a 4-star, so that was always good
here. Yeah.
Good. Uh-huh. They all work harder.
A great right. Rank, too.
All right, Rural Education Report. Former Superintendent Chris Simon. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. As far as rural outreach, we attended the Rural Providers Conference, which in June was hosted by Tenon Achieve Conference. It was a statewide conference run by the Rural Electric Community Action Program, Rural CAP, and it was neat. Met a lot of people there, and a lot of people were asked about residential boarding school because they heard boarding schools and they thought we were going back. If we weren't part of Northwest Arctic or North Slope or the Anchorage Bowl area, a lot of people thought we were going back. So I told them to vary bow length and explain it a couple of times.
Mm.
That was something that I didn't count on.
Mm.
And so I need to work on educating everyone. I was assisting in the planning of an Inuit Circumpolar Polar Conference education meeting for its Alaskan members, but I believe at this point it has been put on hold. We want to come up with a strategic plan on improving the performance. And I attended a portion of the statewide Alaska Tribal Court Development Conference on the Fairbanks. That was about a month ago, I believe, and again, that's where I got another question on the ring. that in mind. Ended a one-day regional meeting between the federal officials, especially the USDA and the tribal leaders in Fairbanks. It's always a learning experience. Provided recommendations to the Alaska Humanities Forum on recruitment efforts for urban rural exchange. They have a lot of urban schools willing to do, but they're having a hard time finding rural schools. Or if it is a rural school, it's a certain school every year. Expand it statewide. Future meetings. Actually, I went to the Alaska State Council on the Arts meeting last week. And they are looking at Alaska Cultural Exchange, I believe, Alaska Cultural Trust. So that was pretty interesting. Being in a meeting, a room full of artists. Actually, pretty neat. They want to talk about marketing and fundraising for the arts. And they, one of the themes that I heard throughout the meeting was increasing art listings in the elementary. Other future meetings, of course, Alaskan Institute and Youth Conference in October. I will be there, and also at the Alaska Federation of Native Convention, Rural Alaska Community Action Program, and Alaska Association of School Boards Annual Convention, Bilingual Multicultural Equity Conference, and planning to travel to Southwest Alaska, the Aleutians this year, and Southeast Alaska representing the Alaska standards or culturally responsive schools. And also, generous support from PLS. It has become a lot easier explaining cultural standards and how it's going to be tied to teaching. And working with other state agencies, continue serving on the private forum, which is the Alcohol Beverage Control Steering Review Committee and local auction victim orders, which has to do with all. Supporting and negative rural Alaska. So it's real relevant because it's giving the kids very throughout the whole impact. But it is, there are quite a few meetings in this state. Written on a presentation method of a BPSO Academy course to assist with more candidates completing the course especially the ethics course. I mean, a lot of the troopers who are teaching for I work there. And as a former coach, I attended the coaching boys into men's training with the last and coach part of the choose of the coaches on all schools in the rural Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Simon. Any questions, comments? Bunny, go ahead.
Just, can you keep me in the loop on the ICC Education Strategic Plan? The achievement gap with our Alaska Native students has always been a concern of mine, so I'd like to keep on top of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Sue?
Just a quick one. I served on the Humanities Board for a long time, and they really will appreciate it if you can help open up additional rural sites for the Rose Urban Rural Exchange, because it's really a valuable program, and the urban areas, we in Fairbanks really appreciate it, but going to the same place all the time is, you know, it'd be good to get a little bit broader picture.
Yes, I got a list of the schools from people in other areas of the state, so I recommended those.
Good.
Great. Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Mr. Simon. Appreciate that. We have the Library Archives and Museums report by the illustrious Linda Thibodeau. Welcome.
Well, you have an outline of what I was going to talk about in your packet, and there are some things that I'd like to add to that. Basically, talking to you about the SLAM project, we are going to, in November, announce the percentage for art awards that we're making for that building, the 1% for art. I can tell you that there are, I guess that you'd call it 1.5 Alaskan artists. Yvonne Verbitz from Japan is going to do glass art for us. And Martin Shelton, who's formerly of Juno now Bellingham, is going to be doing some art benches for us. also another gentleman.
Linda, who's on that committee?
There's a person from the design team, Bob Banghart, myself, somebody from the exhibits, and somebody from the Alaska Council on the Arts, our chair.
Thank you.
Regarding construction for the SLAM, the State Libraries, Archives, and Museums and Building in Juneau, I think it's the most important thing that the board needs to know about this is that the construction is at this point slightly behind schedule. They caught up over the summer with their concrete pouring problems that they had due to the bad weather in the winter. But then we had some quality control issues. We got some defective material, and we lost several weeks trying to figure out how to solve that problem. What had happened was that the walls for the first floor of the vault were poured, and then they have this methodology called post-tension cabling where they took steel cables and ran across the top of the first floor walls, and those cables will also run across the roof of that vault, and those are put into place, and then there's a concrete slab poured, and then those cables are tightened to bring the walls into verticality. And part of the technical requirements for those cables were that they be, they're sheathed in plastic, but that they be totally dry. And there was somehow, and we never have figured out quite how, water in the cable. And so we went through a variety of things, working in partnership with our engineers who spotted the problem and the construction team, and testing and trying to figure out if we could fix them in place or not. Discovered we could not. They were removed before the concrete was poured and replaced. So now we have good post-tension cables, and we're, you know, but I need the board to understand that you may be hearing about this, and it was really a team effort to ensure that this is a 100 or 150 year building and that these cables did not give way after 40 or 50 years of moisture and inside the plastic sleeve. So,
good thing the concrete wasn't poured.
Yeah. Really good thing the concrete wasn't poured. We might have, I don't know what we would have done at that point. The other information regarding the SLAM building is that at the end of the legislative session, there was still $30 million that needed to be appropriated due to the fact that we couldn't award all of the contracts. That price is now escalated to $37 million. So that's the amount that is still needed to fully fund the construction. Stratton Building is what it is. We can't use it right now, so we'll just carry on. We're going to need more money to fix that up at some point. I'd like to thank Teaching and Learning Support. We did a preschool literacy birth to age 2 project in conjunction with them over the course of the last fiscal year, where we supplied word books, manipulative music, and things like that to the 70 libraries, public libraries in the state that have the lowest budgets. And we got great results from that, of just gushing letters from librarians and thanks for that. Gnome got some, got a set of those manipulatives for preschool literacy, and so it was really a great, at $500 for each library, a great project, and we hope to be able to continue to partner with them on that. News on the online with libraries. You got to see the Iditarod School District. That was on the OWL network, and so it wasn't the greatest. We could have had, you know, better or less pixelation, better pictures, but it was much better than they would have been able, we would have been able to do. So you got to see that, and I learned that I need to talk to the people in Fairbanks who plan the video conference about longer wait time when they put the little sign up to say your conference is about to be over with if you want to extend call this number. So I'll take care of that. More about OWL. Just late breaking news at the end of August, the federal government extended the OWL grant. We had $1.2 million left out of our grant, and so we got the fourth year of federal spending on that, so we're going to be able to supply a little bit of extra, even though the state put money forward for the project. There will be a little bit more federal assistance, and so we'll be able to have more training on online with libraries for the state. I wanted to tell you. It's a real privilege to come to Nome. Because I came here, I got to spend Monday afternoon with the library director and the museum director, Tuesday morning with the library director, and reviewed the archival recorders volumes that Nome has. We have an agreement with the city of Nome that those are housed here in Nome, and that every 5 years somebody comes up here and we make sure that they're safe and there's no pests and the humidity and temperature controls are good and it has fire suppression and all of that kind of thing. So I took the advantage of the opportunity to visit the recorders volumes. I got to see the very first one where the three lucky Swedes who founded Nome were writing in their land claims and things. It was very cool. Mm. Oh, my God. Mm. It was great. Mm. And then some of you may have picked up this handout. This is hot off the press from the Institute of Museum and Library Services, Growing Young Minds, How Libraries and Museums Can Help in the Development of Learning. So I recommend this to you. Eric Fright picked up a bunch of them. If you didn't get it, I'd be happy to give Dottie some, or you can let me know, and I will supply those. This is only the executive report, but there is also and that concludes my report.
Thank you, Linda. Any questions, comments?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Linda. And that's pretty cool that you got to put on those white gloves and be that. That's awesome. Attorney General report, agenda item 12. Rebecca Hatton, welcome.
Thank you. Morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
As you can see in page 3, we are in a very busy time of year in terms of litigation and both administrative and Superior Court litigation and federal court litigation. So I'm just going to emphasize a couple of points and then allow a little time for questions if you have them. Items 1 through 3 in my memorandum are a cluster of decisions that are or of issues that are in Superior Court, actually all three in front of Judge Pallenberg, as you know. They all share a common thread, which is a disagreement that the state has with the Disability Law Center about the finality of complaint investigations. And since my deadline to hand in this report, I'm delighted to say we have a decision from Judge Pallenberg in the first, the case I would call Series 1, and he affirmed the department's interpretation of our own regulations as being lawful both under state and federal law and dismiss this claim. And it's too early to assume any results, but I don't find items 2 or 3, what I would call Garrett 2 and Julius 2, those cases are not distinguishable in my mind, so I look forward to getting a similar result in both of those matters. And you'll notice that items 6 through 10 are all administrative litigation with school districts about the level of intensive special education spending. And we had 4 hearings that have all concluded at this point. We had 1 settlement in the district, and to date, about 3 weeks ago, we got a decision in the Dillingham matter. The department was affirmed. And at about 10:30 last night, we got a decision in the Ketchikan matter, and the department was affirmed as to both claims. So, and I believe we are right at the edge of the window for Dillingham, which is the first adjudicated claim to appeal to Superior Court. So far, they have not, but all districts have 30 days because, as I mentioned yesterday, all agency decisions that are final, the appealing party has 30 days to file a request for review of the Superior Court, so it remains to be seen whether or not that happens. Those were the items that board members would be most likely to hear about, and I wanted to touch on those, but besides that, I would welcome to have.
Board Member Shire.
Just have one. On a number of these, the text reads that the commissioner designated someone to review, and it was upheld. And unless I'm reading incorrectly, I think in all of them it was upheld. Is there some way to short-circuit that process? Is that some future conversation about the current chain of events that if has it ever been reversed?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
I think that step is extremely meaningful because it affords the department, you know, if mistakes are made in initial decision-making processes, we want to get it right. And the opportunity to get it right internally is really important, and I think that process does have value.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? All right. Thank you, Rebecca, for that report. Agenda item 13, Commissioner's Report. Commissioner Hanley.
Great.
Thank you. When Dr. McCauley came on board with us during the last session, it was a hectic time, and we told her that when the session's over, things will calm down.
Shame on you.
Shame on me. Right. And so we keep telling her that someday. But the important thing, and this, you recognize it earlier throughout her report, you recognize all the things that are coming down the pike. And if we had a clean slate of context, and I got to put things in order the way I'd like, we put some standards in place, very important. We work towards assessment. Then we'd take a breather, we'd put some teacher evaluations in place. Then we'd take a breather, and we'd put in a new accountability system. And, you know, we would do these things in a timely way, in an intentional way. But we live in a context that didn't really allow for that. And there's a sense of urgency. There's things happening around the country, and you all recognize that. But this board has really led the way in a lot of ways. Not because other people are doing it, we better do it. But because I think this board has seen the urgency and the importance of recognizing the need for our kids to be able to be competitive and really wrestling through those standards. Wrestling through the teacher evaluation component, and as well as other things, you know, a lot of deep conversations with Mount Edgecombe, a lot of deep conversations with the university, making sure they're preparing our teachers. And because of that, there's a lot of things on our plate. Status quo is the easiest way to go. But taking the high road is oftentimes taking the hard road, and I really feel I want to compliment this board for the work they've done and my staff too for the work that we've done to move education forward in the state. It was really edifying for me this last session when SB 47 was put out in regards to residential schools, and they had the boarding stipend in there to increase that or solidify where it was. But the board had led the way, and we had had those conversations previously. We had looked at regulations, and we determined that the board can allow variable term programs. And once the board did that, and I got confirmation that it'd be appropriate to open up a period of application for new programs, we did that before the legislature. It's not often we get to do that, but what we found was as they discussed it and they started asking these questions about, well, what about travel? How will they get paid for this? And what about the BSA? And what about those that had already been addressed by this board? And so we were able to sit there, and I was able to testify to the legislature that, well, here's what we already have in place. And it allowed that bill to move forward. And so we find ourselves now in a very good place. So it's an exciting time to be where we are. As commissioners, it's an exciting time in the department. And I hope it feels that way as a board, because it should be, although challenging and stressful at times, it's because we're doing the right thing and because we're moving forward. So I'm really excited about that. One thing that Susan mentioned that we're actually starting to hear from districts, and I appreciate that, is a lot of our work now is to follow up on the things we've put in place, is to make sure that people have the trainings, people have the capacity to move forward with standards and evaluations and all of those things. And TLS is just doing an amazing job. They were just going 100 miles an hour. They weren't sitting around before. And somehow they figured out how to do, you know, 9 trainings on the standards and another half dozen on evaluations and enough, you know, and they're still going. And what we're hearing from districts is telling legislators and telling other leaders that the department needs more resources. The department needs to help us build capacity. And that's a different conversation even than that we had when I came on board. there was a friction, there was an animosity, and there was a sense that, you know, that, and this is not wholehearted, it's an overgeneralization, but that we're there to be compliance. We're compliance-driven, our role is, and you heard Susan say very clearly, no, and telling her staff, no, we're capacity building, we're support, and districts are seeing that now. And I get calls quite a bit, several I got. Got one from Norm Eck while he was sitting in the TLS meeting saying, hey, I'm at this meeting. This is really great stuff. Your staff is doing a good job. So it's good work as we continue to move forward in a way that I think is valuable. A couple specific things that that are taking place. Well, first, I guess I'd like to say I'm really thrilled that we're here in Nome. I'm thrilled that you're able to see what's taking place. I mean, I was very impressed with the presentation, and it reiterates or reminds me that the importance of continually visiting these schools and visiting and seeing what's going on, because we can't make solid, good decisions from a distance if we don't ever do that. And overgeneralizations are, they frustrate me to no end. When somebody will say, what's happening out in rural Alaska is, and, or what's happening in the big cities is, and you can't generalize that. And what's happening in Nome is pretty amazing in spite of the challenges that are here. And I know that there are Nomes all around the state. There are models of that. And we sat in front of the Senate committee 2 weeks ago, and they wanted to know how we can change rural education. Could we look at the Finnish model? Could we look at these different models? And I said, how about if we look at our models? How about if we start looking around the state at places where we've got high numbers of Native Alaska students, and we recognize the challenge of the disparity of scores, the disparity of success there. What if we start looking at some of those models where they're doing well and start replicating those in-house? I think Nome could be one of those. So it's really important to be able to do that, because it does everyone a disservice, especially our kids and what's taking place in Alaska. If we see, you know, Western Alaska is, Northern Alaska is, Southeast is, it overgeneralizes, it provides prejudices or sets up prejudices that just are inappropriate and stops our efforts from moving forward. We're spending a lot of time this during the interim in House and Senate meetings. And task force. I honestly believe that a well-informed legislature will make better decisions. So we go into that with, although sometimes they're frustrating, you can't quite figure out what's needed. I do look forward to that opportunity to continue to share. So when we get into the legislative session, we've got people who will have a better understanding of what's taking place, and we'll make better decisions. Not that they haven't been good, but we'll continue to make good or well-informed decisions. We're in the middle of our budget time with the governor. You know, his deadline is December 15th, so we are, as well as other departments, working pretty extensively with OMB and his department on ideas that we want to move forward. You know, we really can't share those right now just because they are that deliberative process, but that's also a big focus as far as where do we go next. It was good to hear, speaking of Ackland, I was very excited. That's a big transition for us to take Ackland and put it in a place like UAS, where they've already had players involved. They've got, you know, the Mark Stanleys, and what wasn't mentioned is we have Kelly Sorensen now, who is the new Roxy Morant, and Kelly's doing a tremendous job. So we have her on staff with us, working very closely with the dean. Very interesting to have someone of the level of a dean heading up Ackland at this point. She's very involved with it. She's going to lead this 7-hour meeting coming up on Saturday. So it's exciting to see that taking place, and it's really exciting to see superintendents starting to buy in and seeing the enrollment doing what it's doing. My message has been to that board and to her that it doesn't matter what we have. If nobody comes, we're not doing much of a job.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can rave about our courses, but so I'm really thrilled to see that we we pretty much doubled our fall enrollment. We have courses coming online. For the second semester, one, the Coastal Challenge course, an Alaska Studies, Alaska History course that will meet the requirement for the Alaska History. It's going to be an interactive course. We're working with a gaming company that's going to help it be a really positive course, and a NASA course based out of some of the things that are taking place in Kodiak. So we're going to have some three really interactive courses. So I anticipate that our enrollment will go up even more in the spring. And lastly, I'll just touch basically very briefly on CHEVAC, only because it's been in the news lately. There was an issue with some artifacts being thrown out. There was a sod house on the softball field, and in disrepair, there were several artifacts in there, and sod house was deemed unsafe. So it was removed, and the contents that hadn't been collected previously ended up in the dump. So I've been speaking extensively with Earl out there in CHEVAC, as well as the superintendent. He's invited me to come out and help solve it. What I'm finding is that the tribal organization hasn't been real interested in having a meeting on it right now, and CHEVAC Corporation, there's a couple of groups out there haven't been real interested in setting it up. The superintendent has offered to put Earl on the agenda for the October meeting to discuss it. So I told them I'd stand by if a meeting was set up, and they thought it'd be valuable for me to come. I'd be glad to do it. I don't think it's, I also told them, I said, it's much more valuable if you have a meeting held by locals, because there's long-term closure, as opposed to me coming in or someone from outside coming in, and I might be able to help settle it for the day, but that doesn't bring settlement or, you know, really closure, you know, for the long term. So anyway, I'm keeping an eye on that, and there are just a lot of questions. I know that Earl has been the primary purveyor of information, but talked to some of the school board members, and their questions about whether those were really artifacts or school projects, not to denigrate what they are and what they mean, but I think that's why there's been some hesitancy by the local school board to jump on and have a meeting and and bring the superintendent and the principal to accountability. It seems like there's some understanding there that I'm not fully aware of. So that's a little bit more information on that situation, but I've got Chris in the loop, and Chris is always a great asset when it comes to issues like that. The two of us may end up finding ourselves flying out there, but right now it seems to be a local conversation. So just for time's sake, I'll stop there and allow us to move on, but I really appreciate the way this board continues to wrestle with important topics for education in Alaska.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions or comments? Commissioner Hanley? All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Moving on, agenda item 14.
Chairman, I move the State Board of Education and Early Development approve the consent agenda consisting of the following: approval of the minutes for the June 6 and 7, 2013, approval of the endorsement program in elementary education for the University of Alaska Southeast, and the approval of the following appointments to the Mount Edgecombe High School Advisory Board. Appoint Doreen L. Deaton and Lorraine DeAssis to fill 3-year terms as parent representatives. Regina Johnson to fill a 3-year term as the alumni representative, and Ty Mace to fill a 3-year term as the Alaska Public School Administrator to the Mount Edgecombe High School Advisory Board, beginning this date and ending on September 1, 2016.
Second.
Any discussion? All right, roll call, Ms. New.
Colonel Hayes?
Yep.
William?
Yes.
Cox?
Yes.
Ms. Paul?
Yes.
Shire?
Yes.
Hill?
Yes.
Schaefer?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. All right. We are getting close to the end here. We have board comments. I'm just double checking my agenda, make sure I'm not forgetting something. Board comments. Yes, actually, let's start with Carly and just work our way around. I'll jump in at the very end.
So AllSog had our summer business meeting in the middle of August. It was the 12th and the 13th. We worked a lot with our planner, with our registrar at our conference. All the workshops we wanted to do, we are wrapping up our suicide prevention project, which I'm presenting at the December meeting. We had a little controversy at the meeting concerning whether or not we wanted AllSog to do a sexual education workshop or not, or if we wanted them to present. We were thinking we're going to head towards more of a healthy relationships workshop, but we realized that that is something lacking in our school, so we are probably going to broach the subject more. Another thing is we should be having a teleconference coming up within a week or two, and then the next time we meet is at our conference in Juneau. That's October 17th through 19th. We have an executive board meeting the 16th. The only problem with the conference so far is that in all of the flights are booked, and we still have students that need to come. So we are trying to work with Alaska Airlines to see if we can get more flights. I know that I think I grabbed one of the last seats on the 16th. If you guys are trying to get in and out of Juneau, it's probably unlikely. We don't have tickets. So hopefully we get more flights because we have students waiting for flights. Yeah, that was an issue. But it should be a great conference. Our theme is 8 Stars of Leadership, and we're supposed to be meeting with a lot of our legislatures down in Juneau. So it should be really fun.
Thank you, Carly.
You're welcome.
Sue.
I have a few things. I wanted to make just a comment about going paperless. Our school district just moved to eliminate paper for the board, and I was a little reluctant about it. This is the iPad that they gave me. Use it, but I wanted you to see my notes on our packet. I'm getting to kind of like it. I was resistant about it because I'm used to making these notes on paper, but it actually works out, and so, you know, I would hope we would keep an open mind about in the future moving to utilize a paperless system. I also wanted to request that if we could at the December meeting, I was hoping at the retreat that we would have an opportunity to talk about vision for Alaska going forward, you know, in terms of education. I think that's a useful conversation. I'm hopeful maybe we could have that at some point. Maybe December is the right time. You know, I trust the chair to determine when it is, but I think we need to have that kind of direction-setting conversation.
Dottie, can you make a note, please, so that when the commissioner and I talk about the agenda the next time, that we don't forget to talk about that issue? Thank you.
And then I wanted to just make a little comment. We're concerned about the cost factor for Fairbanks and the foundation formula. I won't take a lot of time about this, but as we were developing our resolution to go to AASB, it was pointed out by our district that the Department of Education is supposed to be reviewing those every 2 years and making a recommendation. In the law, it says that the next recommendations from the department would be in January of 2015, so not this coming January, but the following, or maybe it's July. No, it is January of 2015. And but in our resolution, our administration recommended that we have those recommendations this coming January. I don't expect that the department will do that, and I inserted a resolution relative to always in the past, any change to cost differentials has been initiated by the legislature when they determine to make a study, and then has been updated by them when they choose to. So I inserted a resolution, I resolved in the resolution that we urge the legislature to do that because I believe that's the logical course. But I did want to raise it with the department because, you know, maybe there is a role that the department would like to be participating in relative to that. I don't expect that the legislature will, you know, act to change cost differentials this next legislative session. So that report might be key, and I just kind of wanted to get it on our radar. And then I wanted to report that I also think, thanks to the commissioner for all the testimonies that he and others in the department have been doing with the legislative committees that have been working in the interim. I know that's a strain and a lot of hours, and I just want to say kudos for all the work that all of you have done about that. And then I'm hopeful that, you know, that the conversations that are going on outside of those legislative groups are important. And I wanted to let you know, for example, you know, we've been doing some things with the School Boards Association, you know, talking to folks in industry and like the Anchorage Chamber and other folks we're talking to about education and how they can get connected. And we're also having a joint conversation, a joint meeting of the AESB Board of Executive Board and the ASAA Board, the Superintendents Association, this coming Saturday to really talk about, you know, kind of issues around innovation and cost containment and having more of a common agenda relative to how we move education forward in the state. And I just think those are important, and I'm hopeful that in the future the State Board of Education can be maybe part of, I'm not exactly sure how we would do that, but to be more of a, if we could have a more common agenda across the board, I think our chances of success would be better. And then just a couple of simple little things. Thank you for your work with CHEVAC, you know, because we have a couple of board members there that I've been talking to, and, you know, it's that's a complicated thing for them to work through, and I think the department's been helpful, and they've been viewed as being supportive and helpful. And then I wanted to thank Doug Walrath for the moose jerky because my husband loves that stuff, so I'm taking a couple of people home for Robert. And to all of the folks from Nome because I didn't get to go on the little trip last night, so I missed the facial. I'm sad about that, but yeah, I'm sure it was a great trip, but I really enjoyed the tours and everything. They're doing great things here in Nome. That's all I have.
A few thanks to UAF, their building, and the chamber. She's left with the chamber for the food and the hospitality. That's a big deal and important for us to eat. That's good. And the hospitality of Nome with the museum, that was pretty cool. There's a lot of history here. And Pat Callahan took me 40 miles that way, and then they took us 12 miles that way, and pretty cool. So just thank you to Nome, and good to see your faces again. And the people that went out there just in a different suit. it's great to just see regular individuals and people and just go do things like that, and then it just takes off all off the ties and the suits. You just, for normal people, it's like everybody else. So
yeah.
Thank you.
But I was Gumby last night with my mask. Thank you, James. Bunny.
Yeah, I wanted to thank Tom too. It's an awesome place. I was surprised at how much community involvement they have in their schools and the diversity in their program offerings. As I was watching their presentation, I was comparing them to Kasabu because we're very similar population and size-wise, and they have a whole lot more going on here than we do in Kasabu. So I was happy to be able to come and experience that and see all the exciting things that are going on here, and thanks to Doug Walrath for taking us out on that ATV cruise tour. That was just unbelievable. That was above and beyond. And again, at the chamber for hosting us, and I was so pleased to come here.
Thank you, Bunny. We'll go with Doug and work this way.
I didn't know I was supposed to have comments prepared.
Yeah, you don't have
all
to.
All I'll say is that I'm pleased as a parent to know that, you know, I like to think I'm the smartest guy in the room a lot of times when I go in, and I definitely know that that's not the case, and that's kind of comforting to know that the people who are making or who are charged with the responsibility of making the decisions aren't quite the knuckleheads that I sometimes.
They were
about, right?
I mean, you realize that every level you get to, that it's always the same problems and it's always the same complaints and it's always the same dynamics, but I just pretty
thank you, Doug. I'm glad I'm not a knucklehead. In your opinion. No. All right, Pat.
I just want to say for the record that after the last comments, I feel better. I've enjoyed getting to know Doug a bit, and welcome to the board. It's clear that you care and you're engaged here. And like many sitting around the table, I won't say all, but so often, everything we think about and run into is related to education. How does that fit into this sphere of influence? And I will confess to my new assignment, UAA, have just built a fire under that piece, because it really is connected to what we're doing here in K-12 and the middle college that MATSU has undertaken in cooperation. I also see the importance of governance in this modern age, in the modern age where everybody knows everything about everyone all the time. There is this sense of empowerment, a demand to know, to be involved in the process. So I think this change of perspective for the department is no small task, and everybody here on staff has had a role to play in that. I appreciate that. And I think it's worth protecting and growing. So this idea that other people want visibility into what's happening, I think we do well when we offer those opportunities for folks to become involved. And it won't always be welcome, perhaps, in some cases, just because it's a little tricky. The report on legislative interest over the interim, that was great. Some of the questions that you reported, Commissioner, that you heard, one stands out. What would happen if we quit taking federal money? That's glacial. That's tectonic, let me say. It is completely different from, we don't love the department anymore, we want to just cut, and you've been living on a very thin diet of federal gruel. And now maybe there is some understanding that the state of Alaska can step to the fore and take command of its destiny apart from that federal oversight. One other thing I'd like to mention, well, a couple other, the high-stakes testing. Anytime we do evaluation, there's this perfection, and we all want perfection, but we can't always afford that. And I'm very, very well aware, particularly in the IT world, when somebody says, we want backups, and I say, well, how much do you want to spend? They say, what do you mean? So I can give you a system that's up 95% of the time, and anybody that tells you they're doing 99.9, they're probably lying to you, unless they're NASA or NSA, because every nine costs you from 100 to 1,000 times more than what you're spending in order to get there. So I would just counsel all of us to manage those expectations in ourselves and in our customers and say, you know, this testing, we think we can get by with 90% accuracy. We don't need to spend the money for the extra nine, and we can do pretty well, or maybe 94 instead of 98. And I would just counsel in all that that we really do need to balance what we think we can afford. My hobby horse, a group bulk purchase of bandwidth. Owl's doing it already. Owl is buying bandwidth and distributing it, and it's a great model. I hope that we can get others interested, and I'll be working on that from my corner of the universe with the University of Alaska and other government entities. And just thank you again for TLS. A lot of work, a lot of good changes, assessment. Appreciate that. Nome Public Schools, I appreciate their prioritization. In my thinly veiled question to say, hey, you decided, Superintendent, not to spend money here, but to spend it there. Tough decision. Other stuff didn't get done, but you did it. And I have in my bag here, in my room, the prioritization that the whole university system is undergoing, and we understand that some programs will no longer be offered. Just won't happen. Underwater basket weaving is probably going away. But the thing that's making it work is the president has said everyone will be involved in this. That means the academics, the administrative staff, we're all under the microscope, but we know we're there together. That is strangely comforting. Again, the conversation change, Commissioner, a lot of that is your willingness to meet with constituency groups, your demeanor, your approach to circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Appreciate those comments. Esther.
Well, knowing that the university can get rid of three programs, maybe that some of our districts ought to take heed and see how that is done. Once in, forever. The Alaska Construction Academy's
This is the annual report. Kathleen and I talked about this at length, and I said, you know, lots of pictures if you come from kids. And if you, in case you don't know, you can't have an Alaska Construction Academy branch in your community unless you have buy-in from the construction community. And so it's a really, really strong partnership. But if I can just refer to one thing in here, construction academies provided career path activities and or vocational trainers training to over 5,500 middle and high school students this past year, plus the numbers of communities at the listed at the bottom. So any program that's impacting that many youngsters in our state is something that I think that we can be proud of and take a look at. So you have that on your desk. Many of you know that I'm riding the train for Princess in the summer, and I really, really think I know just about everything historical from Whittier to Talkeetna, but those aren't the questions they ask me. Thought you might be interested in the questions that I get. Every run northbound and every run southbound. Why did I come to Alaska? Why do I stay in Alaska? And why is Juneau the capital? Which is a tough one to answer. Okay. I am truly sorry that Mount Edgecombe went to all that work and through technology, which is supposed to be so wonderful, that we didn't get it. That was a heartbreak for me because I know those teachers had really, really stretched to get that worked into their day also. So I'll be happy to hear, you know, the response to their questions. It was an absolute fun time last night, and I've asked Doug to send the pictures to the commissioner, and if he doesn't, I'm going to pair him up with Kathleen, because you need to see what it looked like when he lost his ranger out there. I kept thinking about that all the time. Every time he got down close to water, I thought, oh, please, God, don't let us go the way the ranger went. It was amazing. And, of course, he had his little kids, he had his mother with him, and him, you know, trying to get out of that mess. That was not good.
And the ranger.
Yeah, that's right. He got
beneath the windshield.
Out of the field, yeah. And certainly thanks to Noam for the very kind hospitality. It's so rewarding and so important as a board member personally for me to see what our rural schools look like. I have a pretty good picture of what the urban schools are doing. But the opportunity to bring this board out here, Commissioner, thanks so very much for that. I know it's an expensive idea, but I think it's well worth every dime that we spend in the process, because it certainly sends a message that we care and that to have that. How else will you know what all is going on? I know what Doug is doing because I'm involved in construction academies. And by the way, the construction academies are very supportive of the school district. But, seeing all of it, and you talk about incorporate the culture in a class. Gee, that rolls off your tongue really easily. I saw that happening, and I saw it on every single whiteboard. And I said, guys, look at this. It's the native language on every whiteboard, and incorporating the art. It was great, and I appreciate everything Noam did, and I appreciate your affecting that to happen.
Can I just add, you know, the state board used to, in the 80s when I was on the board, went every month, you know, to a different place. We only met in Juneau or Anchorage during the session. And so, you know, it really is important that there be at least a little bit of that opportunity.
So thank you. Thank you all for the comments. We are actually kind of late to adjourning. So real quick, I do want to one comment on my, you know, Association of School Boards, AASB, they have their annual conference the 8th through the 10th in Anchorage, and I know that James Fields will be there, Sue will be there. If any other board members, I'd like to say that they've messaged to me that they would love to have us come. That's it. We need to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
We have a move to adjourn. We have a second and unanimous.
Yes.
We're turning off the LIO. Thank you for listening in if you were listening.